Thank you, Steve. Hi, everybody. It's Friday, the best day ever invented. Friday the 13th, actually, isn't it?
You know, I just figured that out on my way in this morning, and then I put my seatbelt on. Kidding, I wear it all
the time.
Wendy,
I'm a counselor up at Camp Crystal Lake, and all the other counselors are panicking today. They're sure that somebody's going to come back in the river and destroy them. I hope that doesn't happen. It happens every Friday the 13th. I hope that streak ends today. And we always hear the same, so you'd think we'd know he was coming, but we never do. The craziest thing.
I think he's turned himself around. He got therapy, and he's not going to hurt anyone
anymore.
Jason
Voorhees?
Yes.
Yeah, he's on the path to recovery.
He'll
be fine. He'll be fine. I don't think anyone on the station has had Rob Reiner on in a long time.
But so today?
Today, everybody has Rob Reiner on. We will have our chance at Rob Reiner very, very shortly. And isn't he one of the guys you've always wanted to talk to, Rob Reiner?
Yeah, but we don't have a lot of time. We just have one little segment.
Right. He's actually going to be on the business lunch today.
You got Rob Reiner on the business lunch.
Steve, if you really can, I would book him. I think every show should have him on today.
I would love to talk to him.
It's a worthwhile cause. If you were listening to Steve Cochran's show, he has directed a film that his son wrote. His son has had some hard times, and he wrote a story about his addiction problems, and Rob went and directed it, and we will talk to him about it.
Yes, Nick Reiner, and the screenplay is by Nick Reiner. And, I mean, really, don't you, if you're Rob Reiner's son, don't you say, Dad, you got to direct it.
Right. It would be a nice plus to have a top-notch director in the family after writing a screenplay. And then if you're Rob Reiner, you should probably say yes.
We'll see. And that's what the problem is. If you watch Being Charlie, and it's opening today is the premiere, I believe, it's about tough love and parenting and stuff. So in a way, you think Rob Reiner should have said no. Get someone else to direct your movie.
Yeah, get Scorsese. See what he says to you.
It's really good.
I think Rob Reiner, I'm trying to think of if there's ever been a movie that he's directed or had any part in that I haven't liked. He's almost foolproof. I know that he made a movie called North several years ago that a lot of film critics will tell you was not the best film, but there were some redeeming qualities to the movie North. Alan Zweibel, who we've had on the show, was the writer for that movie. We've had Alan on a couple of times, and you know, Bruce Willis is in it. Elijah Wood, it's not a bad film.
It's a good cast.
Yeah.
I didn't see it.
Yeah.
Why don't you discuss that with Rob when we talk to him next?
All right.
Bring that movie up.
I'll bring up the low spots in his career, and we'll see if a short interview can be even shorter somehow.
And he'll call you Meathead, and that'll be the end of the interview. Can't wait.
I don't know if you even remember this, but he was on, for a while, he was on The Partridge Family. He was one of Lori's boyfriends. He was like a biker guy.
I do remember that.
And, I mean, we only have a short time with him, but I would love to find out how he parlayed that, you know, just being a guy who did episodic things to being who he is. I mean, you know, his turnabout is fantastic.
It's pretty great.
Right.
Well, let's talk about Being Charlie first, and then, you know, we'll get a nice little relationship going, and maybe we can book him again just to talk about bad movies and the Partridge Family.
Right. Good. We have a game plan in place. Excellent. All right. Rob Reiner, the great Rob Reiner, will join us very shortly, and then a whole big show after that. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
All right. The moment we've been waiting for, Bill.
Rob Reiner is on the line, Wendy. Mr. Reiner, if Wendy and I were to introduce you by saying you probably know him best from his work as Snake on the Partridge Family, would you have more respect or less respect for us?
I would have a lot more respect.
Excellent. Excellent.
Because it is the most important credit of my career.
You know him best as Snake from the Partridge Family. Please welcome Rob Reiner, everybody.
Hey, thanks, Bill. Thanks, Wendy. Thanks for having me. You can also mention the fact that I played a hippie on the Gomer Pyle show, and I sang Blowin' in the Wind with Jim Nabor.
Right on.
How about that?
So there you go.
It's a shame you didn't stay in show business, Rob.
I know. I should have. I had a chance.
So can we talk Being Charlie? I watched this last night. It's touching. I'm a mom of two teenage boys, 13 and 16. Bill, your daughters are 19.
Correct.
I am so scared of heroin. It used to be trying to sneak a beer underage or smoking cigarettes, a little bit of pot here and there. That's nothing compared to this movie Being Charlie.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting that you mentioned that, you know, to sneak a beer here and there. When I was a kid, and I'm a very old man, when I was a kid, there was one guy that we knew in high school that smoked weed.
That's
one
it.
One guy. I mean, it was like there was. It wasn't there. It didn't exist. Hmm. And now it's all over the place. And like you say, there's this epidemic now of heroin and opioids, and it's very scary. The good thing is that people are aware of it, and it's become a bipartisan issue between Republicans and Democrats, and things are being done to help people and not to punish them, to understand that people who are struggling with this need help.
Rob, as this was happening, what was going on in your head? Was it more along the lines of, I thought this is the kind of thing that only happens to other people? Or was it more, well, we're in show business and drugs kind of seep into the world of show business? Where was this playing in your head?
It wasn't playing either of those things, oddly enough. To me, you know, you guys know as parents, all you're thinking about is the safety of your child. You don't think about anything else and how it, you know, who else is doing it, whatever. It's your main charge is to keep your child safe. And so you're kind of at desperate and at wit's end. You don't know what to do. And quite frankly, you know, you, like we say in the film, you'll listen to anybody with a desk and a diploma that'll mm-hmm. help you figure this out. And what his mother and I discovered is that we know our kid better than experts know him, and that we have to be there for him and help him with his problems. Now, the scary thing is that the ante has been upped because, you know, there is all this heroin and prescription drug stuff going on. It's not like you say just smoking some weed or having a beer. It is scary, but you have to look at your kid as they're in pain. They're using something to self-medicate. And what is the basis of the pain? We got to get to that.
And, you know, with heroin being such an epidemic now, I mean, you think heroin, you think Sid and Nancy, and you think loser lowlifes. No, it's not like that anymore.
Yeah, I don't know that it was ever like that. It's prevalent now, and I think it's getting a lot of attention because it's made its way into the, you know, middle-class suburban communities. But the fact of the matter is, kids feel pain. You know, they go through adolescence. The way the world is now, it's sped up. It's because of social media, it's meaner.
Oh yeah.
It's less. Everybody says, well, you know, all this, technology is going to bring us closer together. I think it alienates us more. And I think when you're a teenager and you're going through, you know, the pain of finding your own identity and your hormones and everything, to add on top of it all this other pain and stuff that you go through with, you know, some of the social media, you know, you look to whatever is there that's going to make you feel better. It's going to be drugs, alcohol, eating too much, gambling, whatever it is. And so we have to recognize that these kids are struggling, and we got to help them, not punish them.
Absolutely.
Rob Reiner's our guest, director and producer of the new film Being Charlie, about his son Nick. How was it manifesting itself, Rob, in Nick? What were you noticing the differences in him as he was going through this?
Well, the first thing we noticed was he was with a friend, his friend passed out. I mean, we didn't, you know, we got called because they had a Russian ambulance over because his friend had overdosed and had to be taken to a hospital. So we thought, oh my God, and then what's been going on and what is Nick doing? And then we found out he had been doing some of this stuff too, and we then got really scared, you know, and thought, you know, what if our kid passed out, or, you know, what if he died? And I do remember as a kid growing up in the 60s, my best friend died of a heroin overdose. So I knew what that was about. And so, you know, I think we got both, he and, you know, his mother and I got scared, and we, you know, we listened to anybody, like you say in the movie, that had a desk and a diploma.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you're so desperate, and you're right. Keeping your kid alive is your first priority. At the very opening of Being Charlie, it really hit close to home where you have parents that are completely desperate, and they're trying the tough love. And it's so typical that you have the mom trying. It's hard for a mom to give in and be tough. And it really is.
I think one of the toughest things is that the mom usually is, you know, because a kid will try to manipulate. He'll do whatever he can, you know, and he'll divide and conquer. And, you know, I was the one that in our situation that had to be the tough love guy. And the truth of the matter is I'm not a great disciplinarian. It's not my natural instinct. And so I had to act like, you know, you're going to have to do this. And his mother was like, oh, do we have to do this?
You
know,
right.
A kid can sense that, you know.
And that's the thing, is parents coming together. This is such a huge epidemic right now. And being Charlie, go out and see it. It's the premiere today. It opens this weekend. Because what we have to do is talk to our kids about it and keep an open relationship. Don't you think that's going to help us?
100%. What you said is 100%. If your kid feels like he's not going to get punished for doing that and that you're going to be there for them, it'll help them. It'll help them get through it. You can start getting to the bottom of why they're feeling the pain that they're feeling.
At some point, Rob, your son Nick decides to turn this into a screenplay and then he presents it to you. Was his goal all along to have you direct it? How did that play out?
No, I mean, oddly enough, I didn't even know he was working on it. He met this guy, Matt Elisoffen, in one of the rehab centers, and they started writing about their experiences and the characters they met, and they first wrote a half-hour comedy. And I didn't, they showed it to me, and I had no idea they were even doing it. And I said, well, it's funny, but it doesn't have any of the depth or any of the emotional weight that, you know, of the experiences you went through. You should have that. And then they started working on it, made it an hour to comedy drama, and then eventually I helped them shape a screenplay out of it, and we added in the parents, because initially it was just about life and rehab, and we added the parents in because that was our experience. So it kind of evolved, and it was never anything that I was even thinking to direct. And then as we started working on it and I started injecting my own feelings and thoughts, then it became something I said, oh, let's take a whack at this.
I imagine it's a whole new challenge having lived it. All of a sudden, you're directing a version of something that you experienced for real. That's got to be a strange feeling.
It was very, very difficult, because even though Nick was in a better place and we had weathered the worst of it, and we had some distance, it still dredged up all these horrible feelings, and it caused, you know, tremendous emotional angst during the making of the movie. But it also forced me to see more clearly what he had been through, and it forced him to see a little bit more of what I'd been through, and I think it helped. I mean, we didn't set out to make it, you know, to be cathartic or you know, to be therapeutic or any way, but it turned out that it was.
And how many, I want, if there are people listening who have kids or loved ones of any kind that have gone to rehab, sometimes one time doesn't work. How many times did Nick enter rehab?
Well, for Nick, it was really an extraordinary thing. He went at like 17 or 18 different times, and it didn't work ever. I mean, for some people, it doesn't work. And there are other ways in which you can attack the problem. I mean, AA is great for a lot of people, and it works for a lot of people, but it doesn't work for everybody. And for Nick, it just didn't work. But it wasn't until he got out the last time that we started approaching it in a different way, which is, you know, not punishing, because most of those programs feel punitive, you know, like you're punishing somebody.
And, I mean, it's a problem. You're right. Everyone self-medicates. We're a family of ADHDers. We take medication for that. But people, there are some ADHDers who aren't medicated that search for it elsewhere. Life is not easy, and it's getting much harder. So the whole don't punish your kid, it's a problem. Try and solve it with them.
That's exactly right. And why are we all ADHD? I mean, everybody. I mean, what have we done in this society that makes everybody have no attention span? I mean, you know, whether it's, you know, everything is, you know, 147 characters or, two, you know, a soundbite, a thing, everything is so fast. It's like, you know, nobody stops and says, what's really going on with you? What's inside there? What are you feeling, you know?
Rob, we have a huge favor to ask. You know, we know you're limited on time, and the big message today is to get out and see Being Charlie. But at some point, Wendy and I want to talk to you so badly. We're huge, huge, huge fans of yours and your work. I read two books in the last couple months Billy Crystal's book and Norman Lear's book, and in both they go on and on and on about how great it is to work with you. And at some point, can we have that conversation with you?
Absolutely.
Well, excellent. We will do that. In the meantime, Being Charlie, look for it. It opens. This is the premiere weekend. And thanks for doing this. I think you're going to help a lot of people, and give Nick props, too, because he is definitely going to help a lot of people that see this movie.
Thank you so much. Thanks, Wendy. Thanks, Bill.
You're welcome, Rob. Thank you so much. Have a great weekend. That's
yeah,
Rob
he's
Reiner.
Out of here.
That's Rob Reiner.
He said he'd come back. I love how you put him on the spot. Because we can send him this tape where
right.
he agreed to
we
it.
We have proof. We have proof. You said you'd come back. All right. We'll come back in just a little bit. We have a big show for you. Steve's got the news next. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN. Thanks, Steve. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN, 312-981-7200. If there's anything you'd like to discuss, any questions or comments, feel free to call us or text us. You had an appearance last night. Everything go well?
Oh, yeah.
Was
Builder Supply Outlet. Yes, Tom Jenke and I had a great time. I'd like to thank to all the listeners who came out. There were quite a few of you guys out there. I think I talked to everyone except two ladies, and I apologize.
Why did you ignore those ladies? What happened there?
Because I, while working the rounds, I didn't even get a chance to look around. I wanted to look at some new flooring for my kitchen.
Uh-huh.
But I didn't want to leave anyone out.
Right.
And as I was talking to people, these two ladies, beautiful ladies, walked out and said goodbye to me. I think I was talking to John Tamburino at that moment.
Oh, John Tamburino. I used to work with John, stand-up comic.
He came by to tell me to say hello to you.
Oh, that was nice. Tell him I said hello back
to him. I will do that.
You already know this about John, but John was one of our city's finest stand-up comics.
Absolutely.
Had incredible energy. Like as David Hochberg is to the world of refinancing, John Tamburino was to the world of stand-up. He was like, honestly, like a twister was in the room. You couldn't keep up with him. He was so manic and fast.
And Hochberg was there last night. I should have gotten
man.
The two of them together.
That would have been like a game
whirling
of battling
dervish.
Tops to have those guys in the same room. So John, after leaving stand-up, worked in a toll booth for years on 294. And what would happen is, if you by chance got his toll booth, he would let, I hope this is okay to say, he no longer works with them. Sometimes he'd give you a discount on driving through the toll booth. Sometimes.
But just if you knew him, he
if
didn't
If you knew
do
him,
it.
Right,
okay.
Not everybody. But if he knew you, he said, I'm not going to take your money. Hey, I'm not going to take your money. And then he'd want to talk to you for a long time. And then people behind you might not know that you knew John Tamburino, so there'd be a lot of honking as
and a big line
the line
you?
Would hit a mile or 2 miles long from people who just wanted to go to Wisconsin. But, you know, it was always fun to see him. He's an incredible man.
I haven't realized, I didn't realize that he got out of comedy like many, many years ago. I just thought he was out doing stuff somewhere. He was so funny.
Yeah.
Still is funny.
He really, I learned a lot from him. It was so much fun to watch him work. He was one of those guys who just, it seemed to all just happen. Like it was all just off the top of his head. And I always enjoyed him. So I'm glad to see he's still in the game in some way. He looked to be in good health, didn't he?
Oh, absolutely.
Good. All right, good.
I think
good.
He's still with that company, though, in some way, shape, or form.
Oh, is he?
Maybe.
Then I'm kidding. He would never give anyone a discount at a toll booth. That would be wrong. I'm not going to take your money. Well, put your money away. That's when tolls were 40 cents, you know? So
yeah,
maybe,
boy, they are a lot. Before I pass.
It was in the days before I pass. So maybe because he knew me, he'd let me in for 39 cents.
Right,
you know?
Just a small discount.
The penny's on me. I got the penny. You just pick up
and
the rest.
And he paid the penny.
He did.
He did. You know, his
yeah.
cash drawer always came up, right?
Every time.
And thanks to Pinstripes, they had some great little filet sliders and meatball sliders, and we gave away some stuff. It was really fun. If you've never been to Builder Supply Outlet, I don't know why it bugs Roe so much, but it's 5 miles east of the Oak Brook Shopping Center.
I don't think it bugs him so much as he finds it amusing. I don't know why. That's where it is.
But it's perfect to describe. And then Roe's like, well, how many miles away from North Riverside is it? And it's probably 10 miles away.
Right.
It's just the easiest way to describe it.
Right. May I ask you this? For years here on WGN, I've heard Tom Jenke talk about it, and I've heard his voice, but I've never met him. To me, he's like the man behind the curtain in The Wizard of Oz. What is he like? Is he a nice enough guy?
He's awesome, but you have to go to Builder Supply Outlet in Broadview to meet him.
All right.
He's there.
I can get a discount on the tollway. I know a guy on the tollway that if I were going to head out there, I could probably save a couple pennies.
That's good for you.
But you know what I mean? Like, there's certain people on the radio that you hear for years and years and years, and then you conjure up an image, and then sometimes you'll meet them, and they'll introduce themselves, and he'll go, like, this is just hypothetical because we're talking, hi, I'm Tom Jenke, and then your brain won't accept it because they don't look like what you envisioned. Did he look, was he like what you envisioned?
He was better.
He was even better?
Yes.
That's great.
I just thought he was older. He's not.
No?
And, you know, he's got a lot of years in doing this kind of thing. And I can't believe I had never been there. This is only the second time I've been there.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, I have to go back. I didn't have time to look around. But until you go in, you don't realize that these prices are pretty amazing. You can go to big box stores and look for a vanity for your bathroom or
sure.
cabinets for your kitchen. This is better quality, and I'm blown away by the prices.
Yeah, the prices
really
are right. The quality's good.
So we had a lot of people who had never been there before, which was the whole purpose of this.
Now, you had said to me one of your goals in this was to help people. Did you help people design?
No.
They didn't need to do that.
They don't need me.
Oh, that's
upsetting. They have like a whole computer design thing, so a lot of people signed up for that. It was a great turnout, and no one really cared about my ideas.
What?
They didn't really.
That's hurtful.
I know.
Would you go back if asked?
Yeah.
All right.
But, you know,
counts.
I'd even go to your house and help you come up with ideas if you want, but no one would listen to me.
This could be a good side business for you. You just go to people's houses and go, that thing over there, I'd put it over there. Try it over there and see what you get. Yeah, I like it over there.
That's interior design.
It is, isn't it?
I would like to do that. And be a gardener. I have a lot of jobs, and I still want to be a cashier at Trader Joe's.
The future. Because
you get to carry a box cutter.
Right.
In your own little pouch.
Right.
And I love hibiscus. You get to wear a hibiscus shirt. I got dreams. I'm telling you.
You have to have dreams, Wendy. All right. We will take a quick break, and then we have a lot more show going on. Stay where you are. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
All right. We were talking, again, thanks to all the people who came out to Builder Supply Outlet last night. I showed you a picture of Tom Jenke. What's the wrong?
All right. Like I said a little while ago, sometimes you'll hear somebody on the radio and your brain just formulates what that person should look like. And the version of Tom Jenke you showed me, in brackets, the correct version, looks nothing like the Tom Jenke that lives in my head. Not even close.
How long has he been living in your head?
He's been there about 3.5 years.
Charge him rent?
No. No, I couldn't do that. No.
He kind of looks like Wolfman Jack the picture I showed you.
Yeah.
Which is a good thing.
The Tom Jenke in my head looks more like Tom Ricketts, owner of the Cubs.
Really?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Every time I meet people, they say, oh, I thought you were brunette.
Based on what? I wonder why.
I don't know.
That's strange. I wonder why that would be.
I don't know, but they say that all the time.
Yeah?
I have many color hair, mostly gray. Jay, you had a vision of our own Orion, and did it match the real-life version of Orion?
Well, I'm not sure what I thought he looked like when I was 8, but we were sitting having breakfast for the Illinois State Fair at the old Holodome Holiday Inn they had down there, and I was eating my eggs, and this man was talking behind me, and I kept kind of looking over my shoulder, and my mom was kind of chuckling to herself, and I said, I recognize that voice. I said, I don't recognize that man. Who is he? And finally, my mom said, well, why don't you just turn around and ask him? And here it was, Orion Samuelson was down there introducing something for the state fair, helping support agriculture. And here this man that I've listened to give farm reports for a lifetime now. And it was just kind of a neat experience getting to meet the big O himself.
Did you explain to him, Jay, that he doesn't look like himself? Did you tell him that?
I don't know what the 8-year-old me said. I'm sure it was very coherent and insightful.
You know, it's funny you mentioned Orion. There was a guy last night at Builder Supply Outlet, Brian Steebs, and he gave me a gift to give to Orion, and I forgot it at home. So we're going to have to, and there's a gift for you. But can I just say that this is Brian Steebs said, you know, I have a little gift I want you to give to Orion. Orion's going to love it, by the way.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, what's the special occasion? And he said, I emailed Orion about a certain question, and he got right back to me and personally answered my question, and I just want to give him a gift for that.
Oh,
it's great.
Yeah.
So I hope you were excited to meet Orion.
Oh, I was. And here a couple years ago, my dad got introduced by Orion for an award back down in Springfield. And as my dad walked up the stage, he tripped and fell.
Oh,
so.
No. Did Orion laugh at him?
I don't think Orion laughed at him, but here, my dad's one shining moment and as a lifetime as a farmer, and he stumbles in front of the man himself.
Oh, that stinks. Well, see, Orion made him nervous.
Orion wrote a chapter about that in his book, by the way. An entire chapter. Seemed like a lot to me, but I don't know.
So do you have a farm, Jay, or your dad has a farm?
Yeah.
What do you guys farm?
Our family farms in central Illinois. We have row crops, and then we have a large cattle operation. So.
Wow.
And things are good?
Oh, like everything, up and down.
Sure, of course. Well, good luck, Jay. Thank you so much for checking in.
So you guys bring a smile to my day every day, so thank you.
You're very kind. Thanks, Jay.
Thank you,
Jay.
Take care. May your soil always be on the ground.
That's what people say in the farm business. May your soil always be on the ground. That's the kindest compliment you can pay somebody in the world of farming. There was a guy, when I went to Columbia College, I took some radio classes, and one of my teachers was a guy named Jerry Mitchell, and it's probably a name you don't remember or know, but I will tell you what Jerry Mitchell did. For years and years and years, now, I know now TV stations go 24 hours, but there was a time where TV stations started at either 5 a.m. or 6 a.m., and they went till midnight or sometimes 1 o'clock, and it was a union rule in TV that you had to have a staff announcer come in and announce the station's call letters. That was a union agreement. So Jerry Mitchell's job was every morning he would drive to ABC Channel 7, and he'd say, "You're listening to ABC Television, Chicago." And every night he'd come in at 12 o'clock and he would do the same exact thing.
I don't believe that. They couldn't record him and play that.
No, it was a union rule. He explained the story to us because he was one of my
teachers. Talk about a split shift.
Well, not just a split shift, but the rest of the day was his own to do whatever he wanted. He literally worked 11 seconds a day. He would announce the day at the beginning.
God, we got to find a job that does that.
I know. And he would announce the day at the end, and then whatever else he wanted to do, he could do. But I used to hear his voice because I'd be there at the end of the broadcast day on Channel 7 to hear him say, "You're listening to WLS Television, Chicago." I would hear that all the time. And in my head, I didn't know what to expect, but I thought, this is probably a guy in his 20s, 25, 30 maybe, because
really?
He just had a deep voice, but that was it. But in reality, he looked, you remember John Carradine, the actor?
Was he Kung Fu?
No, that's his dad. David Carradine
was
Kane in Kung Fu. John Carradine was the dad. He was in over 100 movies.
White hair and beard and stuff.
Yeah.
Kind of looked like John Huston a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. A really thin John Huston. John Carradine was in Westerns horror movies and everything. But that's what Jerry Mitchell looked like, was John Carradine. And every time he'd talk in class, I don't know if it affected the other kids in class, but I couldn't look at him because I'm like, that voice can't come out of John Carradine. That's a young guy. That's not John Carradine. What tomfoolery is going on here?
See, you know, it's funny. My son Dylan is reading a book called The Gift, which you're aware of.
I haven't read
it, and he's loving it. He said to me, you know, this is the first time I am reading the entire book that I'm supposed to read in school, and I love it.
Yeah, it's
and
good.
I like to hear that.
Yep.
And so you had told me there's a movie. I was unaware of that. I told him that. He goes, "Yeah, I heard the movie wasn't as good as the book."
Yeah.
And I said, many times people like the book better because their own imagination and their own images are their own. So when they see somebody else's images and ideas, it's different from what you've envisioned.
Right.
Which is exactly like when you hear someone's voice, you envision them looking a certain way.
You know what is a good example of this? I've heard so many musicians say, as exciting as MTV was to the world of music, a lot of musicians have said what it changed, though, was that the listener to any song could conjure up whatever he or she wanted. And all of a sudden, if you were given a short film, a 3 or 4 minute film based on the song, you took that away from the listener. They weren't able to construct what the storyline was. It was force fed them. And maybe that's not as good.
Two words for you.
What?
Rick Ocasek.
Rick Ocasek?
I think he goes by Ocasek, but it's Rick Ocasek of the Cars. I'm telling you, the world's biggest Adam's apple.
He does have a large Adam's apple.
And
yet,
Paulina Porizkova
finds it attractive.
She likes to suck on it.
I don't want to even think about that. If that's true, fine. But
I mean, we loved the Cars, and then I got to tell you, when I saw him on You Might Think was right. One of the videos, and it's great, and I love him, but it was I was taken aback a little bit.
It's jarring because you...
It's not what I envisioned.
Yeah, yeah. Well, for both the performer and what the performer looks like, and then also the context of the song, like sometimes you'll hear a song for the first time and not see any kind of a video attached. And in your head, you've got a storyline playing, but then the MTV version...
The video's different.
It's completely different.
What makes this crazy world go round, Bill.
Yeah. All right, we have a lot coming up on today's show. I'll just give you a quick overview. In a little while, Samantha Nelson will join us to talk about food trucks in the city of Chicago. They've been around for a couple of years, but this summer in particular, they're going in whole new directions.
And a huge variety. I have to be honest with you, I haven't partaken in a lot of food truck activity.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, Kevin and I went out to a food truck, and I think it's one of the ones that's going to be back. And we had, what did we have, jambalaya?
Yeah, something like that, or gumbo or something.
Gumbo.
Yeah.
Wasn't it amazing?
Very, very good.
I mean, it was a little pricey, but really, in all seriousness, getting lunch downtown anywhere is pretty expensive.
I think they hit all price ranges. I think there's almost, I can't name a food now that I haven't seen accessible by way of a food truck. So Samantha Nelson will be by with a preview of all the food trucks. We'll give you a slight update on a story we did yesterday about George Zimmerman. George Zimmerman put the gun that he used to kill Trayvon Martin on auction. And there were some weird details yesterday, but it's taken another strange twist, and we'll explain that to you. Kurt Wagner from TVShowPatrol.com will be by, and also another chance for you to win a trip to Bailey's Harbor Yacht Club Resort. All that's on today's show, so stick around.
You have to come up with another game?
I got it. I'm covered.
You sure you don't want help? I'll buy you lunch today.
I could use some help. That'd be fine. All right, stick around. Big Show, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Can I tell you how much I love reading The Red Eye?
Yeah.
Every day when I go to the cafeteria to get my soda, I grab a Red Eye. And I love it. And this came across, and I wanted to find out more about it. Food trucks are not a new thing, but in my world, they're kind of new to me. Mm-hmm. I haven't partaken in a lot of food trucks. But Samantha Nelson, I saw the article, your food truck preview, and let's talk food trucks, shall we?
Absolutely. I'm very excited to.
All right. There is one that was on here. It's Fuel Up, step away from your desk and into the streets for eats from these new food trucks. The one that Kevin and I went to, it was Bukuru. It was a cute little name. It was a cute little truck.
Yeah, the Cajun food truck.
Yes, and we had some gumbo, and I'm telling you, it was so good. Do they have a restaurant?
It really impresses me how, you know, the variety of foods that restaurants are serving on food trucks now. Now that people can cook on their trucks, it's just incredible.
There's almost any food that you can purchase in a restaurant is available now by way of a food truck, right? There's almost no separation.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one of the things I tried to do with this article was kind of highlight that. So, you know, we've got, as you mentioned, the Cajun food. There's also, you know, desserts, hot dogs, deli food, seafood. You know, if you want to get a lobster roll, you can get that off a truck now.
That is called, that's what I wanted to tell Bill about because he loves lobster rolls.
Yes,
it's called the Happy Lobster.
The Happy Lobster. I'm not sure that title is accurate. Because
well, it's the happy
if you're a lobster,
lobster
you know
eater?
You're involved in. Yeah, that's probably more accurate. Yeah.
All right,
yeah,
they have a lobster roll there, don't they, Samantha?
They do. It's they have a lobster roll, and they also have lobster grilled cheese and lobster mac and cheese.
Oh.
So you can get your lobster fixed in a lot of different ways.
Now, for people who are new to this, are these trucks kind of in the same place every time, every day, or do they alternate, or is there a way to find out what their route is? How do you do that?
Well, so that's kind of the glory of food trucks is that they tend to move around a good deal. So if you're bored with your local lunch options, you might have a food truck pulling up near you. The best way, each food truck has social media presence, and checking on their social media presence is always a really good idea to find where they're at. But Food Truck Finder is a website that is a truly invaluable resource if you're a food truck fan like me, because they have put together a whole roundup of all the different cities food trucks that are active in the city, and they show, you know, it's ChicagoFoodTruckFinder.com, and they'll list where they're at and their different websites, so you can take a look at the menu and get excited.
ChicagoFoodTruckFinder.com.
Yeah, they were a great resource for me putting together this story, and I think a really good resource for anyone who wants to know what's coming to their neighborhood.
There was a battle, Samantha, when food trucks became more popular here in Chicago. There were a lot of brick-and-mortar restaurants that were not thrilled with the idea because they figured these food trucks would be siphoning away business. Have they reached some sort of accord, or are they still at odds a little bit?
You know, I think it's really interesting to me how the relationship between brick and mortar and food trucks has become very symbiotic. There are a lot of food trucks that then eventually become brick and mortar restaurants. And on the other side, there are brick and mortar restaurants like Pork Chop, which I mentioned in my story, that actually have their own food trucks now. And sometimes you'll even find the Pork Chop food truck, as I did one night recently when I was in the West Loop, parked basically right across the street from the restaurant, because the fact is that they're offering a very different experience. People who want to just kind of grab and go a sandwich or some gumbo can do that, whereas people who want a more sit-down experience will actually go into your restaurant. So I think there's plenty of room for both to coexist very peacefully.
Samantha Nelson on the line with us. You're with Red Eye Chicago, right?
Correct.
All right. RedEyeChicago.com is the website, or pick up it daily like I do. Pick it up daily. Obviously, you've seen the movie Chef.
Yes.
That was one of my most favorite movies.
Oh,
I watched it with the whole family. Jon Favreau, great job. But you learned so much about a food truck. I have to be honest with you. You'd see them, and in the old days, a food truck was called a roach coach. And it was like you could get some, if you were a construction worker or driving by, you could go pick up like a bad sandwich wrapped in cellophane. It is like a restaurant on wheels now, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And there's, you know, a lot of really impressive chefs have gotten their start in the food truck business, and, you know, food trucks become so successful that they open up brick-and-mortar restaurants now because people want to be able to find their food on a daily basis.
What happened, Samantha, that changed the game so much? How did these become so legitimate in such a short span of time?
That's a really good question. I mean, I think one of the challenges that was facing, that Chicago had to struggle with for a while, is the allowing people to cook on their food trucks, because that really changes everything. It moves it beyond just, you know, your, like you said, sandwich that's kind of been sitting under a heater for a while, or, you know, something that doesn't need to be heated or refrigerated at all, which is tends to be a pretty limited selection, to something that people are making fresh as you wait. And so it's really more like a counter service restaurant that is actually traveling around the city or the suburbs.
So what was the way of thinking prior to this, prior to them being allowed to cook on it? What was there some sort of an ordinance that prevented them from cooking on a truck? What happened?
Yeah, so there was a big battle about that in, I want to say, 2010 and 2011. That's when I first started seeing food trucks around the city, and for the most part, those were not allowed to cook, which still produced some like good options that you could have, like Flirty Cupcakes. It was actually the first food truck I ever ate at, was back in 2010, and that was cupcakes, because you obviously don't need to and really couldn't prepare those on a truck. But yeah, there were ordinances, and the food trucks, a bunch of chefs, I guess, got together, and for that matter, locals who really wanted that fought the city and tried to point out that it was safe, it was sanitary, and it was good for the city.
I hate to call out your secret, Bill, because we talk about it a lot, but there's a pop-up restaurant in the Nordstrom food court, and every day it's a different restaurant that just kind of pops up, which is kind of like a stationary food truck in a way.
Yeah, it definitely is. I love that concept. I wish more places would do that.
And there is no kitchen there. I mean, they prepare their food and bring it there, so anybody can kind of just use the little kiosk.
Yeah, there's heater. There's heated areas if it's hot food. But it's a surprise every day. I like that a lot.
And that's what a food truck could be, too. I know that when we went out just beyond Pioneer Court last year, there'd be a different food truck there every day. But I think there's one that was there all the time. I can't remember if there was one consistent one or constant one and then another one varied. Mm-hmm. But it is nice to find the location. And what is that website again, which I wrote down somewhere, that I want to figure out where all the food trucks are?
Sure, it's ChicagoFoodTruckFinder.com. And, you know, not every food truck on it is is on the website, but it is a good majority of them. And, yeah, as you were talking about, you know, every food truck has a slightly different strategy. There are some trucks that are in the same spot every single day, pretty much, or there are some trucks that have a specific day of the week that they're in certain places, and then they change the next day to a different place so that people can find them more easily. But some that really just cruise around and find where hungry people are at.
Samantha, you talked about the lobster and the lobster rolls from the Happy Lobster, and I've already petitioned them to change their name because the lobsters are not happy about this at all. Can we take a quick break and you can give us some of your favorites? Is that cool?
Sounds great.
Excellent. The Red Eye Samantha Nelson is with us. We're talking food trucks. Again, that website is ChicagoFoodTruckFinder.com. If you want to know where your favorites will be, we'll pick this up next. If you want to call in, 312-981-7200, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
All right, we are talking to Samantha Nelson, who wrote something in the Red Eye that I love. It's called Fuel Up, Step Away from Your Desk and Into the Streets for Eats from These New Food Trucks. Now, to be fair, Samantha has not tried each and every one of these food trucks.
It'd be impossible to try all of them.
But she, you did talk to the people to see what they offer. And what I would like to mention, Samantha, is it's kind of like a mini taste of Chicago, because you can get various portions. Like if you want a little sample gumbo, it's going to be cheaper than the full-blown cup of gumbo. Is that how it works?
Absolutely. And, yeah, there's lots of, you know, different portions depending on the truck. You know, some of them are for full meals. A lot of them have, like, little appetizers, like Chicago Lunchbox. You can get a full, like, basically a banh mi sandwich or a Korean rice box, or you can just grab some jalapeno poppers or fire rangoons, as they call them.
Oh, does that sound? See, that's what I like, because sometimes maybe you just want a little appetizer. You don't want a whole full meal.
Right. Would you
say... Oh, sorry, go on.
I was just going to say, would you say normally the price of a lunch at one of these, it's got to be comparable to a restaurant, right? It's not too much higher or too much lower. It's in the same ballpark, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And sometimes, you know, a little bit lower, since obviously, you know, you're not paying tip or anything like that. Well, I guess though sometimes you can pay tip.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'd say lower than a sit-down place, but about comparable to your typical counter service place.
What is the most exotic dish you found at any of the food trucks? What's the one that
and
you
And what's his name?
That's great.
Wendy went blue on you, didn't
yeah,
she, Samantha?
Sorry.
She went all blue on you.
Something about a sweaty chef with a headband on that turns
sure.
me on.
How could it not?
I guess one of the most exotic I was thinking is Bruges Brothers, which they do Belgian-style frites. So you can get beef and duck fat frites with a whole variety of sauces there. So you can get English curry or...
frites meaning French fries?
Like palm frites like fries, right? Yeah.
Exactly. Huh. So it's a pretty decadent meal. But you can get your fries covered in, you know, cooked in duck fat and beef, and then covered in, say, like a curry sauce with garlic and ginger, or like paprika and garlic and tomato sauce. And then you can even get it with chimichurri steak.
Wow, that sounds outstanding.
Fries with chimichurri steak on top? Steak fries. Look at that.
Exactly.
Oh, that sounds really good. What about from a dessert standpoint? Are there a couple that stand out if you just wanted to get, you could just get a dessert. Why couldn't you, right?
Absolutely. So Auntie V's is a dessert favorite. That they've got a lot of different ways to grab something sweet. They have frozen cheesecake on a stick and a few different varieties. So you can get your key lime cheesecake or peanut butter banana chocolate cheesecake.
Oh.
And you can also actually get a 6-inch deep dish baked cookie.
And where will they be at 11:30 today? Because I'll find them. Wherever they are, I want to find them. Boy, does that sound good.
I don't know, but if you go to AntieVs.com or follow AntieVs on Twitter, I'm sure you can find out.
Bill's got to figure out how to use Twitter first.
Right.
But that is the way to do it. That's what's so instantaneous and wonderful about Twitter. Not only do you get breaking news, but you get breaking news as to where your favorite food truck is going to be if you follow them.
Yeah.
All right. The Fat Pickle is a truck that you mentioned. And I have to ask both of you right here if you would try the Fat Shallot. That's a sandwich. Listen to this. It's grilled salami.
Yeah.
Topped with a fried egg. Barbecue sauce and pickled red onions on a challah bun.
Yeah.
And then they have turkey pastrami with pickled green tomatoes. The pastrami I would have. But the fried salami with an egg on top?
That seems busy to me. Samantha, is that something you would go for?
I would try it. The fat shallot is actually the name of their original food truck. The fat pickle is a new option from the fat shallot. And they do really good sandwiches. They know what they're doing. And,
at the
and
fat shallot?
It's called the fat pickle. That's the turnoff or the spinoff of the fat shallot.
Yes, exactly.
All right.
And so yeah, the fat shallot is the original food truck, and I've eaten their food, and it's great. And their garlic fries are also wonderfully decadent.
In sampling all these foods, was there anything? And you don't have to mention the name of the truck. Actually, don't mention the name of the truck. But did you try something and just go, yeah, I'll never have that again ever?
Oh sure. Yeah. I mean, that's definitely a thing when you try any new restaurant, for that matter.
Yeah.
And so I guess the good thing about a food truck is that if you try something and you don't like it, you're not kind of stuck there sitting at a table for a while.
You can toss it in the garbage can as you walk away.
Right,
and
right.
Really, you can.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right. Even for the health conscious, there is a Loop Juice truck. I know our own Dave Ennett would like to go there. You can get smoothies, right?
Correct. Yeah, smoothies and fresh juices.
So you get can you pick if you want good stuff without the kale? Can you get a mango smoothie?
Yeah, they've got plenty of they've got your vegetable smoothies with the kale. But if you want to just go something light, you can have their detox smoothie, which is blueberries, ginger, lemon, and pomegranate.
Oh, that sounds very good.
That sounds awesome.
I would do that. Now, Samantha, none of these are zoned to do alcoholic beverages. You can't get a margarita or a Mai Tai at any of these yet, can you? Or is that never going to happen?
Not to my knowledge. I mean, there's certainly plenty of beer trucks that serve at festivals, but as far as I know, none of these food trucks actually also serve alcohol. It's pretty hard to get a liquor license in Chicago, and I assume getting a rolling one would be impossible.
Yeah, I guess. All right.
What if you promise not to taste your own stuff that you
make?
Because I think we should get a cocktail truck that's out there every day at 4:20 or something.
Yeah, Bill and Wendy's Moscow Mule truck. That would make us $1 billion, probably.
We could have it pulled by a mule. It could be a trailer.
I know.
Oh, I love it.
All right, we're in.
Well, thank you so much. Summer's coming, and really, I am the queen, a self-proclaimed queen of the fest. I like to go to fests, and now I might be the self-proclaimed queen of the food truck this summer.
Mm-hmm.
So get outside, enjoy your lunch break, and read The Red Eye and Samantha Nelson. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Samantha. Have a great weekend.
You too.
There were several of those that, as we're reading the description, I'm thinking to myself, I would not just try that. I would eat there often. You know, if I knew exactly where it was, if it was an easy walking distance, I would do that all the time.
Well, I'll help you. You can't get on Twitter. You could go to ChicagoFoodTruckFinder.com and look around and see what they have to offer.
Doesn't Pioneer Court, which you mentioned, usually has about a half a dozen trucks or so on a daily basis, right?
And is it that many?
Yeah, I think there's about 4, 5, or 6 out there almost every day. I think so.
It is kind of fun because, you know, this might break me of my cafeteria habit.
Yep. Finally.
I just like to have a selection every day that's different. You know,
right.
You go to Corner Bakery and it's good. They got the same menu all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, now that there's a food truck, I may go outside.
All right, good. Sold.
Get some fresh air this summer.
It'll be better for you. All right, we'll take a quick break. Kim has the news and then more show ahead. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Thanks, Kim. Can I ask you two quick questions? Question one, what did you do to Orion Samuelson? No one can find him.
Maybe he liked the good white fence.
Oh,
there he is.
He's
there.
Oh.
You know, this barbed wire fence from Huntley sometimes breaks down, and this one broke down 10 seconds before I was about to be introduced. So,
oh, no.
Yeah, and I'm not enough of an engineer to figure it out. But all I can tell you, and we'll get to more of it at noontime, but all I can tell you is the stock market slightly lower.
All right.
Thank you.
That's fine. We'll find out more at noon. Thanks, Orion. We're glad you're okay.
Oh, I'm fine.
Kim, when a show ends, like The Good Wife ended, and we'll talk more about this with Kurt Wagner from TVShowPatrol.com at 1:35. When you've watched a show for years and years and years, you're obviously a loyal fan, and then it fizzles out in the last episode. Does that kind of taint your memory of the show a little bit?
Yeah, it just kind of leaves a bad taste in your mouth because you were so invested in this, and there's just you can't get your arms around the ending.
Yeah.
You know, you just have no idea what happened. I mean, you know, you can suppose and think and read into it all, but there's no There's no definitive ending.
You know, I've heard people say this about The Sopranos. Now, I love The Sopranos start to finish. I thought that they never had a weak season. They always had the story moving. The characters were rich and had all kinds of dimension to them. But people always point at that last episode of The Sopranos. I know so many people who say, yeah, that episode, it ruined the whole experience for me.
It did not.
It didn't. I don't think it did.
I mean, and that's what people are comparing this to, actually. Yep. I don't know if you read the articles, yep. But yeah, they're comparing it to The Sopranos ending.
Yep.
It all started with Dallas.
Well, that wasn't the end of Dallas. That was midway through Dallas when they decided that an entire season was all the dream of one of the characters. But that show still went on for, I think, 4 or 5 years after they did the Bobby's in the shower scene that wiped out a whole season.
Do we need to know what Bobby's doing in the shower?
No, thank you, please.
I mean, please.
Nope. Nope,
and also Seinfeld. A lot of people were disappointed. We were working at Q101 at the time, and we had like a big Seinfeld finale party.
Yeah.
I don't know how I feel about that. I know it was so long ago, but I guess I didn't realize how terribly mean and rude and insensitive all those people were.
But you know what? Because they've talked about it with Seinfeld. Their goal with Seinfeld was to tie up loose ends and to bring all the characters that had been on the show over the seasons. They wanted to have them all involved, and they figured out a way to do that. And I think more people than not were displeased. Seinfeld was one of those shows that just, it hit on all cylinders, and it would have been so hard to do the best episode of all time at the end because they had so many good ones over the years.
That's true.
You know, can I submit one? The show Lost was one of the best things I've ever seen on television, and it seemed like, I mean, it's easy to look back and say this now, it seemed like as Lost was going on, they didn't know how it would finish.
They were making it up as they went along, it seemed.
I swear I think so. Even though they say no, they knew the direction they were heading in. The end, especially the last episode, didn't come close to figuring out all the mysteries.
I still don't know what happened.
I believe that it was hard to tie things up properly, and I don't think they did it right.
See, TV is a tough animal because if you have a show that's going strong and it keeps getting renewed, why would you ever end it? I know you have to.
Well, there's the theory, and Seinfeld subscribed to this theory, and the Mary Tyler Moore Show did, which is go out on top. Don't fizzle out. Don't have your fan base go, boy, remember when that show used to be good? Look at it now. It's terrible now. Both those shows and other shows have done this. The Good Wife did the same thing. The guys who did The Good Wife said, we didn't want it to linger and linger, so they pulled the plug.
And now they're looking at a spinoff, too, I think, of Christine Baranski's character.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's what I've seen. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
All right, somebody is saying Dexter ruined, the Dexter finale ruined the whole series for this particular person. I never got to the ending, so don't ruin it for me.
Oh, okay, I won't say. You know, it's weird.
I really haven't.
I watch Dexter every once in a great while. I didn't see it every week. I usually liked what I saw. I know how it ended, and I understand why people would be disappointed. Not just in the last show with Dexter, but kind of the last season of Dexter. Not up to par with the rest of it.
Because I loved that and watched it pretty religiously, and then all of a sudden it got out of my habit.
Right.
And I think I lost the last season or two.
Oh, did you? Now, can I tell you one that I think was a really strong last episode, but people always talk about how this was one of the worst of all times. On Roseanne, they did a thing at the end where it kind of shifted gears. And again, I'm trying to be careful for people who watch the show and don't know what happened, but they did kind of a shifting of gears for the characters, and it was revealed that what you were watching wasn't exactly what you thought, and people were so critical of it. And again, the last year or two of Roseanne wasn't up to snuff with the rest of it.
It was still one of the best shows on television.
It was still good, but they did a thing where the characters won the lottery, and all of a sudden they went from being really poor and lower middle class
to the Beverly Hillbillies kind of thing.
And I'm not sure that was in their best interest, but the last episode I thought was really interesting. They did something so foreign to the show, and people are still critical, going, boy, you took a show that was so good for so many years, and then that last effort was just worthless. I don't
agree. Was it a memoriam type thing? Without giving away too much, because I can't. I loved it. I watched every episode, and I watched the finale, and I can't remember what I watched yesterday.
Kind of explained at the end that the way you thought you were watching the characters wasn't quite right. That was somewhat in one of the characters' imaginations. That one of them was a writer kind of writing a different version of the characters, and then they talk about what really happened when the show ended to the characters. And I always liked that as a plot device. 6 Feet Under did that so well.
Somebody just have said that was the best finale ever. I don't think I got to the end of that either.
They did this great thing where, because they knew the show was coming to an end, they showed you with all the main characters what would happen to them in years to come.
I like that.
It was really...
It wraps it up in a nice little bow,
so
unlike Lost.
Yeah.
Somebody said the best series finale ever was the last Happy Days. It will choke you up. You
I'm
have to refresh my
to
memory.
I remember what happened at the end of the last Happy Days.
I think Mr. C...
I know he made a toast to his two kids, and I was at home yelling, "You left out Chuck!"
Chuck was gone after the first season.
I know. He went upstairs. He never came back. He had a basketball. Right. He went upstairs. He's still in that house. He's still upstairs.
I love, like, why didn't that show just address him, like, years later? That, to me, would have been really funny.
I know.
Because you can't just forget they had another kid, yet they did.
Well, here's like a weird inside story about that. Ron Howard, of course, played on Happy Days. He was Richie Cunningham. The actor who played Chuck is an actor named Gavin O'Herlihy. And what Ron Howard has done is he's cast him in nearly all of his movies since.
Seriously?
As a way of
saying,
because
he feels bad?
Yeah. As a way of saying, like, we just lost him, but he's still out there. Look, he's here. He's in the movie. You know, so that's payback that Gavin O'Herlihy has gotten out of it. But, you know, the best ones are always, I mean, if you're making a list of the best series finales of all time, St. Elsewhere did something at the end of theirs that was unparalleled.
Awesome. And that was unforgettable.
Yeah.
That's how you know it was a great finale, when that sticks. Same thing with, we're getting a lot of text, MASH, the last episode of MASH.
The last MASH was great.
Did you guys mention the Bob Newhart show?
Not yet.
The second show, right?
The second one. That was the best, yeah.
With Daryl and Daryl.
Yeah.
I didn't really watch a lot of that show.
It was, you know, it's funny because it might not have been as great as the original Bob Newhart
show.
Hi,
Bob.
With the foggy-voiced Suzanne Plachette, but they pay nice tribute to the original at the end of the second Newhart.
Oh, I do remember that.
Really inventive. And I interviewed Bob Newhart, and I said, whose brainchild was that? Because that's a stroke of genius. His real-life wife, Ginny, was the one who came up with that and said, wouldn't it be funny if this is how the show ended, and everybody went, oh, yes, that would be perfect. So it was his real-life wife that thought up that ending.
That is so clever.
Yeah, yeah.
It really is. All right, 312-981-7200. It's Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN. Shiny, happy Friday. That's what this is, everybody. We're finally seeing the sunshine. It is gorgeous outside.
It is nice.
Get out and smell the roses.
A little colder. Like, if it were up to me, I'd make it 10 degrees warmer, but I'm not going to complain. It's sunny again, so good.
That's not a complaint?
It's a thinly veiled complaint.
All right. Let's talk to Andy. Andy's on the line. Hi, Andy. We were talking about the Happy Days finale and Chuck.
Yeah, you know, Chuck, there were two different characters that played him, and it was only around for 1 year, but two different guys had to play him. Besides that Hurley guy, you also had the guy that played Eddie Haskell from Leave It to Beaver.
No, that's a different guy. There's a similar look to him. I know there were two Chucks.
There were two Chucks.
Yeah, there were two different actors playing Chuck.
Of a character that died after the...
he didn't die.
Well, no, but he disappeared.
It was the 50s. People didn't die in the 50s. They waited until 1960, and then they died. But
really? Two people?
Yeah, Ken Osmond is the guy who played Eddie Haskell, and he would have been too old to have played Chuck.
All right. I know there were two different Chucks. I mean, he was just around for a limited time, but they had to have two different guys to play him.
Yep. So, and do you remember, I don't know if you remember the scene, Andy, I don't know why this rings so true, on their Christmas episode that first year, because all Chuck ever did was play basketball, and they handed
he
him
got a basketball.
Right. It was a round present.
It was wrapped up, and he didn't have to unwrap it. He just bounced it.
Right. Right. That was the beauty of Chuck Cunningham. Well, thank you, Andy. Have a great weekend.
You too. Thanks, guys.
All right. Take care.
All right. It was Gavin O'Herlihy.
That's the Chuck that always lives in my heart. That's the true Chuck. The other Chuck was a pretender.
He only lived in your heart for 1 year, though, didn't
he? Yeah, and then vanished.
And Randolph Roberts.
Yeah,
This was seasons 1 and 2, 11 episodes, the oldest son of Howard and Marion Cunningham, an older brother of Richie and Joni. Chuck is a college student and basketball player, rarely seen, and disappears without explanation in season 2.
He just went upstairs in an episode, and then The family, it's not so, it's sad that he wasn't on the show anymore, but I'll never forget that last episode. It was a wedding scene, and Howard Cunningham is toasting his family, and he goes, Marion and I are lucky enough to have two great kids, and I'm just at home screaming, Chuck's still upstairs. He's been upstairs for 8 years. Let him out.
There are a bunch of people, according to mentalfloss.com, that suffered from the Chuck Cunningham syndrome, is what they're saying.
Where you just vanish? You disappear?
Yeah, but some of these shows, did you watch Family Matters?
The Urkel show? I know there was a sister on that vanished,
That's
right?
That's her, yeah, Judy Winslow.
Yeah, she vanished.
She just went away. She was originally the third and youngest of the Winslow clan. As the show moved towards Urkel, Judy, who was never that popular, was rarely featured and just disappeared after the fourth season.
But how weird is it that the family would just never address it? Like, if you had a brother or sister that just vanished, wouldn't you at some point go, hey, remember when Betsy used to be here and now she's not here anymore? What happened to her?
But didn't they say Chuck Cunningham was away at college?
No.
They never even mentioned
just
that?
Just didn't. Yeah, they left it alone.
And then I watched the 70s show religiously. Here's one. Most fans of that 70s show would consider Donna Pinciotti, Eric Foreman's formidable friend slash love interest, to be an only child, and they'd be mostly correct since that's how she was portrayed for most of the series run. But in the first season, Donna had a younger sister, Tina.
I don't remember that. I didn't watch it often. I only saw it every once in a while.
All the time. She appeared in one episode and was promptly never seen or heard from again. So Laura Prepon, or I don't know how to say it, that's Prepon. Who played Donna.
Yeah.
She had a younger sister, Tina, who was in one episode and never came
and
back.
That's it. Yeah. And that's it. Now, let me extend this just a little bit further. You know, sometimes on shows, there'll be an actor who, for some reason, they recast, like the two Darrens on Bewitched.
Two Beckys on Roseanne.
The two Beckys on Roseanne. And that's always kind of jarring because, again, the family would go, that's where you look different somehow, but they can't because it's TV. But on the Flintstones, there were two different Mr. Slates. There was a tall, thin Mr. Slate, and there was a short, kind of heavy-set Mr. Slate.
But they looked the same. They both had glasses and balding.
Yeah, they were similar in look, but a different
body. How could a
body...
cartoon do it? It's not like you're having a right. contract dispute right. with the actor.
It's a guy with a pencil somewhere drawing it. So I don't know. I get why the switch of Darren's or the switch of the Becky's.
Which they mentioned on Roseanne on several occasions, and I always thought that was great.
Right.
Who are you? Oh, right. you're or something like that. They would mention that it right. was a different Becky.
Remember the show Family with
Seda Thompson?
The always smiling Seda Thompson.
How about that?
And Christy McNichol. The character, Buddy Lawrence's oldest sister, was usually played by Meredith Baxter, sometimes Bernie, but Meredith Baxter, depending whether or not she was married to David Bernie at the moment. But there were three different Nancy Lawrences. And I don't understand that. Like, how do you not just settle on one? They just would switch them all the time.
Yeah, that doesn't seem right. I don't know. Maybe Chuck did go to college, Matt. Did they mention that?
There was a whole episode on it where Richie moved in with him.
No, I remember that. I do remember
that. Was that Beyond episode or the first season?
No, that was in the first season.
Yeah, because all the, like, Fonzie and all the other guys would use... Well, their house to bring girls in and stuff like that.
Oh, is that when they put the, if you put like a shirt on the light, it meant that you had someone there or something?
You got it.
Oh,
exactly.
Very good. Very
yeah,
good.
So yeah, Chuck definitely was in college and then I'm sure he went on to bigger and greater things.
But wouldn't the Cunningham family, a loving family in Milwaukee, wouldn't they at some point check in on him? Or was there a fight between he and the parents? They just never, they never addressed him anymore.
No, I agree, especially with Tom Bosley voted one of the greatest TV dads ever. You
sure.
thought he would have paid attention.
Yep.
Wasn't he, though?
He seemed to be.
He seemed so sweet, and he and Marion Ross seemed so in love. I mean, they really did seem like your really perfect family.
I don't know if you'll remember, Matt, maybe you will. Wendy, I'm sure you will. The Cunninghams never had sex. They would get frisky.
That's
they
right.
They would always say they would get frisky.
That's true. Yeah. That's true. They always kept it upstairs.
Good lesson for the kids. Don't have sex, kids.
Go.
Just get frisky.
Matt, have a great weekend. Hope you get frisky.
Hey, you too.
Wow.
Thank you.
It's the ultimate compliment, isn't it? All right. In a little bit, we're going to take a break. And again, a quick reminder. Yeah, Kurt Wagner will be by with TVShowPatrol.com later on. And then your chance to win a vacation getaway to Bailey's Harbor Yacht Club Resort, the premier Door County destination. That's coming up in the second half. I've got a game I think you'll enjoy. Stick around. We'll find out what Steve Bertrand has on the Wintrust Business Lunch in just a minute. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Do you know what today is?
Today is Friday the 13th.
Something else.
What else is today?
Kim, any guesses?
What is today?
It's my son's dog's birthday.
Is it Kim's son's
dog's
birthday?
Kim wins a prize. There we go.
Is that today?
Today.
Why does that always sneak up on us, your son's dog's birthday?
What's the dog's name?
Kane.
Oh.
As in Patrick.
Is Kane listening right now?
I'm sure he is.
Happy birthday, Kane.
Oh, you pretty little Jojo.
That, of course, dog for... What does that mean in dog?
I love you. Happy birthday.
Yep, that's what that means.
Why do I talk nicer to my dog than I do anyone else in the world?
Because they don't talk back.
Amen.
Why when addressing their pets, like the voice you just used...
What are you talking about, Bill?
That's standard fare. Like, why would a dog understand that more?
You can tell that they... they understand the niceness in your voice and the tone.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, because, you know, I come home, I go, hello, Mr. Oogie Googie.
Right.
And Tiki just cocks his head and looks at me and says, God, you're weird.
And who exactly is Mr. Oogie Googie?
Tiki.
Oh, I didn't realize. Okay. That makes sense. I
thought he was Mr. Poopoo.
I sometimes call him that because I made the mistake of calling Kevin Mr. Poopoo the other day.
Yeah, that's not offensive at all,
ago.
Is it, Kevin?
I didn't really know how to feel about it.
I said it nicely, though, didn't I?
Yeah. But yeah, you did.
I've noticed my entire life when people, when addressing their animals, they won't just like.
Hi, Tiki.
I would use my regular my voice.
No,
I would.
You gotta have a puppy voice.
You have to use that voice, I guess.
But don't you do that with a baby too?
Yes.
Yeah, me too.
We never did it with our babies.
You're cold.
Even my neighbor, Mr. Oogie Googie, when he comes by, I don't even use that voice when he comes over.
The bad news is my husband and my kids try to text me from Mr. Oogie Googie and nobody can figure out how to spell it.
Right.
And so it's
the
kind
spelling of
Oogie
Googie is very tough.
All right. Well, today, in addition to it being Friday the 13th and Kane the dog's birthday, it's National Hummus Day.
Today's National Hummus Day?
Do you like hummus? You can be honest.
Nope. I do not.
I love hummus.
I have recently come to love it. I've always loved chickpeas or chashi, as we call them in Italian.
Yeah.
And all they are is really hummus is smashed chickpeas,
oh,
sesame
now you
seeds,
sold me.
Olive oil, lemon, and garlic. And it was originally made in the Middle East, and
right.
We now have it on the Middle East side.
Right. Right. I guess you're right. Yeah, it doesn't work for me. I don't know why, because I like Middle Eastern food a lot.
Yes, you do.
But hummus is not among them.
Well, in honor of National Hummus Day, we have a little something to share with the listening audience. We had lunch at Naf Naf Grill.
Always sensational.
Chicken
so
shawarma
good.
Is my best friend.
Yeah, isn't that good?
Hey, Mrs. Shawarma.
And
meet Mr. Uji.
Mr. Uji. Right.
They would get along. Well.
I enjoy the Naf Naf Grill immensely. They're so good.
And there are various locations, 14 in the Chicagoland area, including 3 locations downtown, Michigan Ave, Wabash, and Washington. And then I have gone to the one that opened in Oak Brook. I kept checking their nafnafgrill.com, nafnafgrill.com, to see when the Oak Brook location opened, and I think I was there on its opening weekend.
Were you there for the beginning? Yeah.
Really great.
Yeah.
So the fine folks, in honor of National Hummus Day, the fine folks at Naf Naf Grill would like to share their hummus. That sounds dirty.
It does sound dirty.
So let's see, since it's Lucky 13, Friday the 13th, 13th caller right now, 312-981-7200, you get a $50 gift card to Naf Naf Grill, any of the locations to find one near you, nafnafgrill.com.
That's very generous. Thank you, Naf Naf Grill. And don't forget, use the greeting I taught you when you go to Naf Naf. They love it when you walk in as loudly as you can, go, Naf Naf, and they all yell, who's there? It's the funniest moment of your day. You'll see.
Do you know you've been doing that all day?
I can't help myself.
And you say it like not in puppy talk. You're really
mean inside voice. Yes, I do.
Mean inside voice. I didn't know you had that.
Yep.
All right, caller 13 will get the $50 gift card, 312-981-7200.
All right. There was a story that Kim reported in the news a little while ago that you wanted to comment on, and with good reason.
Yes, I heard Kim doing the story, and maybe Steve Bertrand can expand on this. I didn't remember the location, but somebody wants to make the school day start later, around 8:30 for high school people, students. What a good idea. It should have happened years ago.
Yeah. You know, I've always thought a slightly later starting time. Actually, I'd
noon
be okay with
be
a month.
Good.
I swear to you, if it was 11 o'clock, I would love it. That
this
would be
was
great.
This is Arlington Heights School District that's doing it, and they're the latest in several.
And they're moving it over an hour, Steve? Is that their plan?
I think it's from 7:30 to 8:20. But what's interesting is the American Academy of Pediatricians actually recommends
Pediatrics.
Nothing before 8:30.
Oh, is that right?
So they're still even earlier than what they're recommending.
We have our high school in our district starts at 7:45. The bell rings then.
Yeah.
And then the junior high is 8:30.
Yeah.
And I think 8:30 was the latest since my kids have been in school. This was the first year I seem to recall 8:30 being a start time, because it was always like you had to, the bell would ring at 8:10 or something.
Right, right.
I'm sorry, those extra, even if it's a half an hour, makes a huge
Doesn't
difference.
It really does. Now, by me, where I live, and I know other people have a similar situation, but there are so many schools right around me. I can't even begin to count, but there's at least a dozen schools within a couple mile radius of me, and they all start at slightly different times. And I talked about that when I had the night show. I couldn't figure that out, and everybody who called said the same thing. You have to stagger the starting times of schools that are close by, because it would create such a traffic gridlock if they all started at the exact same time. So they set it up with whatever city it is to give them each, you know, an extra 10 minutes or 15 minutes or 5 minutes, just so they're not all starting at exactly the same time.
Plus, if you have two kids at different schools, you need to be able to drop them
true.
Off.
Yeah, very true.
But, I mean, you know, I know they say if they, you know, I'm with you. A 10 or 11 o'clock start would
Wouldn't
be,
that be perfect.
Perfect.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, kids wouldn't mind going later in the day.
Right.
It's just then you can't have after school activities.
Oh.
But that's when you can have the after school activities in the morning. Michael still has madrigal practice at 6:50 in the morning before school. Well, if you start at 10 o'clock, you could still come in at 8:30 and have a little bit of a practice before school.
But doesn't he, like, there were a couple of sports at my school that I wasn't involved in. A couple of my friends were on the swim team, and they would always have practice before school.
6:30, the swim team at our high school is 6:30.
All right, so then toward the end of the school day, though, aren't those kids a bit drained from being up that long already?
I don't know. I try to think of this. I always feel sorry. Michael sometimes on magical days has like a 6:50 start, and then he goes to school. He goes to the school radio station, goes to the guitar shop he works at, comes home at sometimes 9 or 10 o'clock at night.
It's a long day.
And I'm feeling so sorry for him. And then my husband always says, he's in high school.
Yeah.
I mean, you have more stamina. You couldn't
do
it
sure.
now.
Right.
But, I mean, we had after-school sports, and I'd get home at like 6:30 every night.
But the argument people have made is, if you're tired at the end of the school day, you got a problem because you're sitting in a class and you're barely awake. But if you're playing sports after a school day, it's not the worst thing in the world to be a little bit more tired. You're just waiting for the ball to be passed to you.
Although more injuries when you're tired.
Yeah, I guess there would be more injuries.
Kevin, do we have a winner?
We certainly do. Her name is Pam, and she lives in Evanston.
And she is getting a $50 gift card to Knopf Knopf Grill. Pam, happy National Hummus Day.
Mm-hmm.
Woo!
There's a Knopf Knopf right there in Evanston. It couldn't be more handy.
Awesome. All right, quick break. Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder, 720 WG.
It's us. It's Bill and Wendy. And you already know how you can contribute anytime you want. 312-981-7200. That's the phone line and the text line. Yesterday during the show, we told you about George Zimmerman. And if you'll remember, George Zimmerman was the man a couple years back who killed Trayvon Martin in an awful, awful story in Florida. Well, what happened yesterday was George Zimmerman took the gun that he used in the slaying and put it up on an auction site with the goal of selling the gun. And we debated a little bit back and forth the pros and cons of this. If I remember correctly, both you and I were incredibly opposed to it. We understood its place in history and thought if it should go anywhere, it should be in a museum. But it seemed a little odd. that he'd be profiting off of this.
Yeah.
Seemed a little ghoulish that he'd be profiting.
But he wasn't charged for anything, Bill.
Yeah, I know.
That's the difference.
I know.
And then the site took it down later that morning, actually.
Yeah, that was as we were doing the story, I'm trying to remember the way it played out. Did somebody text us
yes.
and say, if you go to that website, you'll notice?
Or they called us.
Right. That's exactly what happened. All right. Well, what happened later in the day yesterday was, and I don't know what went on behind the scenes that made the website decide maybe this isn't appropriate, so we're going to take it down. But a couple of hours later, the gun was back up on the website.
It was?
Yeah. Yeah. The starting bid, if you'll remember, for the Kel-Tec PF9 pistol.
Like that makes any difference to me between a different other kind of pistol.
I'll be honest. I don't know what that means either. I don't know the difference between the guns. But George Zimmerman, said at the beginning he was going to open the bidding up at $5,000 and then see where the auction would take him. As of today, as of Friday, now I'm going to tell you what it's up to, and it's a shocking number, but don't be shocked because I'll explain a little more. As of right now, or a little while ago anyway, that particular gun, the gun that was used to kill Trayvon Martin a few years ago, is up to $65 million.
What?
Don't be shocked, because I know you hear that and you go, who would spend any money on something like this? This is a terrible thing.
Let alone $65 million.
What happens in a case like this is you get bidders who just want to screw the auction up. They don't have $65 million. They have no intention of getting $65 million.
But if you bid that, don't you have to agree to terms that you'll pay it if you're the winner?
You do, but it doesn't play out that way. Now, what normally happens in high-end auctions, because even though I've never been in high-end auctions, there have been things that have been auctioned off that I've thought to myself, I want to follow this and see
how much it goes for.
Yeah, yeah. What happens is you have to pre-qualify. Before they'll accept any bid from you, you have to send the auction house. And sometimes eBay does this. There have been a few on eBay that have said, this is a high-ticket item, so what we need you to do is to pre-qualify and send us your bank material so that we can check and make sure you are who you say you are and you have the funds if you win the auction. Evidently, in this particular case, that didn't happen because
Donald Trump was the one who was bidding on it. He didn't want to send his tax records.
He'd be one of a few people that could afford it. The top bidder at one point, now this is not the person who right now has the $65 million bid, but tell me if you think this is a little bit suspect. That bidder's name is Racist McShootface. I'm almost positive that that's fake.
God, what has happened to America?
Well, I'm not condoning this, but I understand that somebody's going, okay, if you're going to play with the rules of society, I'm going to also, and I'm going to mess up your auction, so I'm just going to bid the highest number I can possibly imagine, and you're not going to get your money.
I hope Racist McShootface has attorneys, because, I mean, I thought you had to pay what you bid if you enter into an agreement.
You are, I mean, we could talk to Rich Lankoff on this, but I'm almost positive if you read the fine print in any of these auctions, and normally you're not talking about an auction that goes up into the millions. And I was trying in my head yesterday, when I first heard about this story, I was trying to figure out what this gun could possibly go for, because really the sky's the limit with somebody who goes, I'm going to own a piece of history. It's a dark, awful piece of history. But somebody out there who is a gun collector, or you could also argue that somebody who wants to make a point and say, this gun is a very important part of the generation we lived in, so now I'm going to own it. But I couldn't figure out what the price would be. There's no way in the world anybody would pay anywhere near $65 million. So they're jacking up the price to make a statement on their own.
I want to know what happens, though, because I know something as simple as eBay. If you agree to buy, you know, a melon baller
right.
for $3.99,
right.
they're going to shake you down for that $3.99.
There, you know, I've both bought and sold. And again, this website is not eBay. This is a gun website. It's a gun auction website. eBay, as I found out yesterday, because I don't deal in guns at all, you can't put guns up on eBay anyway.
Right.
You can put parts of guns, evidently, but you can't put
a firearm up on eBay for obvious reasons.
But wouldn't you have to be a certified gun owner to bid on this? I mean, they have to totally check you out. You can not just anyone can go on this gun website and buy it.
I would just be guessing, but I would think you'd have to be. I would imagine. I don't know the rules on that. But on eBay, I've been both a buyer and a seller, and if you do read the fine print, they do kind of explain to you that you're going into a legally binding agreement anytime you bid on an item, and you are, you know, you are forced to pay.
Although there are ways that one time one of my kids got into my eBay account and bought something, and I contacted the seller and said this was purchased in error because I didn't approve it. And they said, okay, no problem.
Oh, they
problem.
Were good with it?
Yeah, I mean, but if not, you have to be willing to pay it.
Absolutely.
So that's part it of just it. Depends who you're dealing with.
Yeah, yeah. So here we are on Friday. The auction started yesterday. It got pulled down. I can't find the reason why it got pulled down, and I don't know the reason it got put back up, but it did. And as of now, for those of you who have a lot of money and a funny fake name that you want to use, it's at $65 million. It remains to be seen what exactly will happen because, as we pointed out, ain't nobody paying $65 million for this gun. That's not going to happen.
Uh-uh.
I agree. All right, a lot coming up, including Kurt Wagner from TVShowPatrol.com. He will tell you why The Good Wife's final episode is infuriating a lot of people. Also, later on, your chance to win a great trip to Bailey's Harbor Yacht Club Resort in Wisconsin. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Thank you, Steve. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder with you on WGN. On Fridays, Kurt Wagner comes by from TVShowPatrol.com. And we learn about the world of television, don't we, Kurt? How are you?
Sure. Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Nice to see you. Earlier, we were talking, and I knew this would come up with you, but we prefaced it just a little bit earlier. The Good Wife has been on television for years and years and years, and most people seem to enjoy the show The Good Wife. But they announced during the Super Bowl that this was going to be it. No more Good Wife after this season. So we just had the season, not
series.
Just the season finale, the series finale. And people who enjoy the show are up in arms. They're furious. What happened? And again, we have to say, we have to be careful for people who have not seen it, but the general consensus is they're not pleased with the way the show ended.
Right. I think that a lot of people didn't think it gave closure to the characters and to Alicia Florek, who was the main character, who was the woman who stood by her man at the very, very beginning of the series.
Yeah.
And she did it again in the series finale, and it was to the detriment of some other things in her life, and I think people were angry about that.
But what happens when you got a show where, and I mean, I don't have the numbers, I don't know exactly how many people, but everyone I've talked to, everything I've read, people just say, we love the show for so long, and it just disappointed us at the end. What do you do with that?
Well,
is part of that disappointment because their favorite show is over, too?
No, because I think if it ended on the right note,
right,
people would go, well, it ran
right
its course.
Well, you know, Mo Ryan wrote something in Variety about that when that something like this happens, that it sort of calls into question, like you start to view the past episodes and past seasons differently in this immediate past season. I don't know if I do that necessarily, but... because I don't know that I can remember what happened on a show three episodes ago.
I know. Sometimes that's really difficult.
Yeah. There are other people who are so into it, you know, that it really does upset them. And I mean, they probably have, you know, with this particular thing, I don't want to say what it is necessarily, but, you know, it did make you wonder, well, was that character the woman we thought she was?
Right.
You know, or it is kind of surprising. It's even, I didn't watch that in the last few seasons that often, but it is kind of surprising even to me what happened.
You know what else you see is a lot of times the cast and the people behind the scenes will stand behind it. Everybody involved will go, no, you know what? We're happy with the way it ended. And then what happens is maybe 6 weeks out, a couple months out, a year out, the major stars come forward and go, yeah, we're looking back at it. And we're not happy with the way it ended either. We wished that we had been consulted. Like How I Met Your Mother is a good example of a show that when they first put out the last episode, everybody connected with the show is like, no, we're thrilled. It ended fine.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've read in the last year or two, all the stars have come out and go, yeah, I have no idea what happened there at the end. That was a mistake.
Yeah, I mean, they're probably still on the payroll for a while.
Oh, maybe.
You know?
Maybe. Could be.
Yeah.
All right,
and things that have ended, there are a lot of network shows that were ending for reals, and one of our favorite shows, Bill, I am heartbroken to find this out, ABC's The Family.
Yes.
It's not been renewed. Who do I write to?
ABC, I would imagine.
Write to ABC.
This was such a great television show that went, it was like more than a television show.
Right.
I felt like I was watching an M. Night Shyamalama Ding Dong movie every week. It was really good.
Well, you can watch that this summer because Wayward Pines will be back.
Oh.
And that is an M. Night.
How many seasons has that been?
This is just the second.
Yeah. Oh, I can catch up easily. But the family, here's my question. There's a mystery going on, and if it's canceled, they're not going to pull it off the air now. They're going to let them finish the season.
It's got only another episode or two, I think, for
probably,
this year, and that's it for the year.
But what if they end the last one on a cliffhanger, which a lot of shows do, and then it never comes back? Don't you think that people who are in charge of a television show should have an ending just in case they're canceled? For us, for the people who have invested weeks into this and time into this,
yeah,
and then
Kurt.
It fizzles?
Like film to
options. Wrap it up.
Yeah. Possibly.
Well, who do I write to there?
Still ABC.
But now it's going to be too late for this one. But I mean, that's happened so many times, you know. And I know that there have been some shows that they've actually done that alternate ending because they weren't sure.
Yeah.
You know, but it's usually a show that's been on more than one season they've done that for.
Right, right.
Where they've sort of had this one little scene that sort of makes it finalize it a little bit better than what it was before that.
Do you remember a show, I think we're going back maybe 5 years, there was a show on called Flash Forward, and the premise of Flash Forward was nearly everybody in the world blanked out at the same time. Mm. And sometimes it was unfortunate because they were driving a car or an airplane and they crashed. But other people, they just flashed out, they blanked out, and during their blank out, they saw the future. They saw that what was going to happen in 9 months or something. And I loved, like,
that
every episode.
That sounds like a great concept.
Oh, it was fantastic.
It was pretty good.
And then I go, well, this is can't miss. This is going to be on for years. And then at the end of the season, they resolved it a little bit, but not all the way.
Right. And that might have been that kind of case, that they saw the writing on the wall that, you know, it's not going to come back. And, you know, for this show, for the family, it was a little harder, too, because it wasn't even a full season. It was a 13-episode season, I think, and so it wasn't the whole 22. Flash Forward, I remember that. Wasn't that fun?
Yeah.
And that was sort of at the time when Lost was starting to make people very angry, and so people were sort of fighting against the serialized drama like that.
Well, they were looking for, every network was trying to find a new Lost, and that was ABC's hopefully new Lost, but it just it never took off, unfortunately.
It got lost, all right.
It got lost.
It did.
For listeners who weren't into The Family, don't bother getting into it now, but there are some other shows that made news as for being canceled. Maybe we should reveal those for
Castle, which we've talked about before because
Is that canceled?
They were getting rid of the lead female character.
Yeah.
Well, now they just cancel it. They just said, okay.
I read
it's probably not going to work. Like everybody says, it's not going to work without her, so let's just cancel it.
A week ago, less than a week ago, Nathan Fillion, who's the star of Castle, he's Castle, they announced he would be back for another season, but then they just pulled the plug anyway.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Agent Carter, which was critically acclaimed, but apparently not enough people watched it. It was one of the Marvel things. She plays the character who knew Captain America back when he was first Captain America.
In the 40s.
I watched a couple of those.
And that was actually a good show. I liked that. It was on for two seasons. They're not bringing that back, but she's already cast in a different ABC pilot that has been picked up
to
be a series.
So good for her.
So what's the actress's name?
Haley Atwell.
She'll still
be on television. Nashville.
I thought that was so great. I was just going to start watching that.
That kind of surprises me. It's been on a couple seasons, two or four seasons, maybe. I'm not sure. And the music, I mean, those cast members tour now musically. They do concert tours
and everything.
Yeah. So that surprised me a little bit, but, you know,
is that
ABC.
The one Hayden Panettiere is on.
Yeah, right.
And she's.
And Connie Britton is on there too, yeah.
And Hayden Panettiere is in some sort of trouble, right? Has she checked into some.
She
sort of a
has
center?
Depression issues.
Yeah, but
postpartum.
She's done.
Oh, she is?
But they had her character on the show do the same thing. So.
Oh.
But she's back on the show, and she's apparently back.
She's married to the Klitschko, the boxer.
Oh, is she?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh. The Muppets is canceled.
But you
saw that. I tried. My kids liked it. I did not like it.
Hmm.
Fox got rid of comedies The Grinder and Grandfathered, which...
The Grinder is the two lawyers. That's Rob Lowe and Fred Willard.
Right.
And Fred Savage.
And I would have liked it better.
Grandfathered was...
John Stamos. Okay, so those are gone.
This Border Town comic animated thing.
Oh, I don't know that show.
And then their show Second Chance did not get a second chance.
Whoops. You've been waiting all day to say that.
Right. No, I've already said it. Oh.
As a critic, though, that falls into your lap. You can't help yourself. Yeah.
Right.
Hayden Panettiere, by the way, married to Vladimir Klitschko, who's a pretty established boxer.
Yeah. Yeah.
About five times taller than
she
is, too.
I have no idea that she was married to. CBS Cyber, or CSI Cyber got canceled, which...
That's gone.
You know, a short-lived CSI. Containment on the CW, which was the Outbreak series, the series of
Outbreak. Oh, I do know what that is.
Outbreak.
Yeah.
That was all from last night.
So of the series that have been on for years and years and years, the biggest shocks are probably...
Castle,
and to some extent Nashville, right? Those are the ones that...
Yeah, I don't know that Nashville ever had like a huge ratings.
No.
New ones just announced today. Last Man Standing was renewed on ABC, which blows
good
my
news
mind.
For you, Wendy.
Yeah, my girlfriend Lisa Nelson writes for it.
Game of Silence canceled on NBC, which was another one of those twisty mystery things that's on Thursday nights.
Is that the one with the girl with the numbers on her arm? Is that Game of Silence? Is that something else?
That's
Barcode Girl.
Yeah, what is that called?
I'd watch that.
It's about a girl. Every week she goes into a jewel.
That's on NBC.
And they ring her up. They scan her up. And
that's called Blind Spot.
Like Maggie Simpson.
And that's for you because that was like a huge hit.
Oh, it was?
Why
get rid of it if it's such a huge hit?
It's not. Blind Spot.
Oh, that's coming back.
Yeah, that's coming back.
All right.
Yeah, and there's a bunch of others, but... You know,
can
it's
we
too
go,
long
to,
of a list
to go to TVShowPatrol.com and find out all the information?
Eventually.
All right.
Oh, come on. Hop to it.
Sometime in the next few months.
Yeah. Right. And next week is when all this stuff is happening now because the networks next week do their upfronts where they present all their new shows and their new lineups
they
for the fall to advertisers, and so everybody will get to see them. And like it looks like ABC, I'm just looking online here, it looks like ABC released the pilots that they picked up for their new programs, they released little teaser, video teasers of those. So I'll probably put those up later this afternoon.
Oh, good.
And eventually I'll have all of those up, so we'll see more. Oh, like Chicago Justice is coming.
That one we know is coming back. That's pretty new.
That got picked up after it aired its pilot as a Chicago PD episode Wednesday night. And then Thursday they announced that they were going to have that. So we will have four Chicago shows.
How about that?
Fire, PD, Justice, and Med.
Kurt, is that guy with the really gravelly voice, is he still working? Does he still have a job on one of the Chicago shows?
Hector Elizondo?
Oh, yeah.
Not Hector Elizondo. There's some guy.
Jason Begay
on
Chicago PD.
Did you ever hear him? He always talks like this.
I don't need to hear him now.
No.
I don't think Chicago radio.
I've interviewed that guy before, and he's intense, as intense in an interview as he is as his character. Although he's a great guy, he's very nice, but he's very intense.
I would think.
When you're talking to him, when he tells a story and everything.
Kurt, sit down. You want some nesty? I have nesty. Do you want to split a nesty?
Is it Dick Wolf who does these shows?
Yeah,
Dick Wolf is all these, the Law and Order guy.
Come on, do Chicago radio. Wouldn't that be something?
I read that he recently said that he has an idea for a fifth show.
Oh, he does?
He won't say what it is, but you got to think in the terms of what would go well with those four.
Right.
It has to sort of blend in, like, what business crosses paths with all those.
Politics.
Probably politics.
I bet politics.
Politics would
orthodontistry. Do you think orthodontistry?
I was thinking Streets and Sand.
Could be Streets and Sand.
Pothole Parish. That would be good.
Now we got a show.
They never have to cancel it.
The Rat Patrol, the Mayor's Rat Patrol.
That would work. All right, give us a call. I see the calls are lining up. People want to know about their favorites. 312-981-7200. Kurt Wagner from TVShowPatrol.com is here. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Kurt Wagner's here from TVShowPatrol.com. And Kurt, I couldn't help but notice you look like you just thought of something profound. Do you want to share it with everyone? What did you just think of?
Oh, no, I just saw something that made me laugh.
Oh, all right.
Care to share it? Last Man on Earth, canceled or continuing?
Probably continuing, but
that's pretty good. Blacklist?
People are texting.
Renewed. Last Man on Earth is renewed. Blacklist is renewed.
Code Black.
Code Black is undecided.
Person of Interest.
Person of Interest is
done
after this summer when it starts.
Whispers.
The Whispers is gone. Done.
What's that?
That was
Whispers?
A summer show last summer on ABC.
Yeah?
It
won't be back
like this
summer.
Is it about people who just whisper?
It's related to Game of Silence.
Oh, it is?
No.
All right. Lee has a question. Lee, this is Kurt Wagner, TVShowPatrol.com. Did you have a question?
Hi there. Yeah. Last summer they had a summer show on called Secrets and Lies. It was really good.
Starring the Kardashians?
Yeah. No, not necessarily. I was wondering if it's coming back for this summer.
What is Secrets and Lies, Lee? I remember that title, but I don't remember the show.
It was a story. They found a little boy dead in the woods, yeah. And they thought that the father of this family lived across the street from them had murdered the little boy.
Yeah, that was that wrapped up that.
Sounds like The Family.
A little bit. It does.
Well, it wrapped up that story, and I think they have another story that it will be on again. I'm not sure if they'll renew it after that, though.
And
so there
will
be another season.
I too am furious. This was the first I heard that they canceled The Family. I can't believe that.
That's too bad, isn't it?
I can't either.
Yeah.
Well, it just happened.
Horrible.
All right. Well, thank you, Lee.
Sorry.
Thank you.
We'll have to find something else. Homeland. Is that still going to be going?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
The Americans?
Yeah.
That seems pretty good.
Oh, and you asked earlier about Rookie Blue. Rookie Blue was a summer show. That is not coming back either.
Rookie Blue.
Yeah.
Okay.
Kevin took a phone call from somebody who couldn't stay on, Kurt, and the question they had, and I guess everybody wants to know, when a show you really enjoy has been canceled, what recourse does the viewer have? You mentioned writing a letter or making a call to ABC, but what are they going to do with that? Are they going to do anything?
Not really.
Look, what Betty White got to host SNL because of a Facebook page. Weren't there, what's that, Arrested Development? Did that come back because people were whining about it?
I came back because Netflix, you know, did
I guess that's a
new
way
season. That's a different thing. I mean, they're, you know, like I heard that they're shopping Nashville around to go somewhere else.
Yeah.
You know, so that's a possibility with that. Jericho is one show that several years ago, mm-hmm. there was a line in the show about something about peanuts. And so the fan base, which was a very well organized fan base, got together and sent peanuts to the network.
Right.
I think it was NBC, and sent just loads and loads and loads and tons of peanuts to the network. And they ended up bringing it back for a season, and still not very many people watched
right.
it. So it got canceled again. But it happens very rarely.
But look what's happening now with the Mindy Project
right.
was on Fox
well,
and Fox.
There's more possibilities of that happening, but that's when you had to convince those Hulu or some other network or whatever to pick it up and take it.
Yeah.
All right. I was late to the party. Bill, you turned me on to this, and it is one of my favorite shows. I binge watched all of the Vinyl episodes. I love it. I love just being a music mother. I love seeing, like, you know, the rock and roll stars depicted by other people, and Mick Jagger's son is doing a great job in this. Too much cocaine and boobs for me, technically, but I like it.
It should be HBOO.
But now is Vinyl renewed?
Yes.
Love
they
it.
Renewed that almost right away before it was even, you know, like after the second episode or something like that. So they renewed it without having read the backlash.
Yeah.
You know who's the lead in that? Bobby
Cannavale.
Yes,
yeah,
oh, I love
he's really
him.
Good, isn't he?
President of his fan club.
He's really good. HBO's going through a little bit of turmoil now, though. They've always had three or four or five really strong series. Right now, they're kind of down to Game of Thrones, and Vinyl has had mixed results. Mm-hmm. Is this a downtime for HBO?
It kind of is for them. I don't think they have... I mean, even the shows that are well-regarded, like their comedies, like Veep and the Silicon Valley, that's what it's called.
Veep is hysterical.
Yeah, they're great.
I have never seen an episode
you would love
of that.
It.
It's so funny.
And several people have made this analogy. I'm by far not the first. A lot of it is playing out fairly true to life in real life politics.
Well,
you know, there's a lot of
stuff.
I mean,
I think that, you know, they certainly fashion some of the attitudes that are on there, and not necessarily the exact character.
Yeah.
But, you know, some of the character attitudes or you know, foibles and stuff they fashion
right.
after.
And they keep adding, like, they've got a strong cast anyway. But they keep adding more and more actors and actresses to the show and some pretty good names.
Right. Well, the beauty of that show is that they can have them come in and, you know, Washington politics, they can have them doing something. And right now she's running for re-election. So
yeah.
Part of the action is at her office in Des Moines or somewhere, you know, like
right.
at the election office in Des Moines somewhere. So, you know, they can expand that all the time. And they do get the really good actors.
Oh yeah,
because it's, you know, it's a great cast.
Yeah,
it's a high quality show, but it's still, I don't think those things have the buzz of the Sopranos, you know, of all those other big huge HBO hits that sort of changed the landscape a little bit, you know. And so that's why some of HBO's not as high quality stuff is still
Is AMC
pretty quality?
Like, if you had to pick the most prestige network on TV right now, is it AMC?
I don't know. AMC's got really great stuff. They have this new thing, Preacher, coming out soon, which is
based that looks good.
Which is based on a comic, a graphic novel. They're really prestigious. I think FX has some really good stuff on it. HBO, Showtime has a few.
Telemundo. Yeah. No, maybe.
They have some good. They have some stuff coming up that actually, it, you know, looks like it might be good. Some dramas, some telenovelas and stuff that looks like it might be kind of fun. I mean, basically, you got your nighttime soap operas or telenovelas anyway.
Yeah,
so
they are.
It's the same kind of thing, yeah. But I would say, all in all, if you could only have one network, it would be maybe HBO, AMC, or
that's
FX
one of them,
or something like that. Yeah.
All the shows that, if you're wondering if your favorites have been canceled or renewed for next season, go to TVShowPatrol.com. And Kurt, you said you will get to that eventually.
Is
that
right? Well, I mean, you know, next week, when they announce their new shows, I always put the shows that aren't coming back in that list. You know, I don't have a running list like some other sites do, but you know, Emery's site has the running list. My Take on TV.com, she has a running list of canceled and renewed.
All right.
That's just a list, yeah.
Perfect. Great to see you. Have a great weekend.
You too.
That's Kurt Wagner from TVShowPatrol.com. We'll take a quick break and then Steve with the news. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. As it turns out, today is Friday the 13th, and we will explore some of the myths surrounding Friday the 13th and other mysterious superstitions. But I have to ask Steve a question really quick. Steve, you talked in the news there about Donald Trump.
Yes.
And his failure to release his tax returns. Last night, I don't know if you saw this, on The Daily Show, they did a montage where over the years, they have asked Donald Trump for years and years and years about disclosing his taxes. And time after time after time after time, he explains that he would. Unfortunately, currently, he's being audited, which he's doing right now.
So he's in perpetual auditation.
He's always being audited. Well, he said last night, he said in one of these clips, and these go back for years, anytime anyone asks him about his taxes, he claims he'd be happy to. Unfortunately, he's mid-audit, but he explained that he's always being audited, and he believes that the reason they've pinpointed him to be audited so often is because he is a Christian.
He said that?
Yeah. Is that a thing? I don't think that's a thing, is it?
I learned something on Roe's show yesterday that if you're audited and you clear the audit, they can't audit you again for 3 years.
I've heard the same thing.
So if he keeps getting audited, it's because things aren't turning out correctly.
Well, there's no reason if Mitt Romney said this yesterday. He said there's no reason that an audit should keep you from releasing your filed tax
return.
Right,
you still have.
It's not as if there's something that releasing that information is going to impact the audit one way or another. You know, you're dealing with that with the IRS. They have what you released.
Right.
You know, it's not going to give them any information. You already filed that. So the reasoning doesn't seem, I mean, there's nothing about an audit that would prevent him from doing it.
He just doesn't want to. He doesn't want to play by the rules is really the bottom line.
But is this another one of those things where if it were any other candidate,
yes,
it would be a huge problem, but you just throw it on the pile if it's Donald Trump. You go, well, there's another thing he's not doing like everybody else.
Right.
Right?
And, you know, as he said, many presidents haven't, or many presidential candidates have not released them. Of course, we have to go back to the days of black and white TV.
Yeah.
Actually, not quite. 76, I think, that everyone since 76 has done it. And he said he was going to do it. He said it repeatedly that he would do it.
In his own time.
But other than, I mean, I don't know what other conclusion anyone could draw other than,
something
well, then there's something to hide. What? Why else wouldn't you do it?
Because he doesn't want to play by the rules. You say turn it in, I say no.
Yeah.
That's what it seems like to me.
Why didn't they trick him and tell him to not show his taxes?
Because whoever asked him did it the wrong way.
Right.
You
please do
it.
Not release your tax returns.
Under any circumstances, do please. Not show us your tax returns, please. And Steve, I made this point the other day, but I was thinking about it more yesterday. You know, he was all over Barack Obama about his birth certificate.
Yeah.
If Barack Obama had said, hey, guess what? I'm not going to show anybody my tax returns. Trump would have been on him 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. He wouldn't have let him alone at all.
Absolutely, because he would have claimed that it showed Obama paying taxes in Kenya.
Right.
Right.
So true. All right.
I'm just absolutely sick of Donald Trump.
Well,
I just can't.
Honey, you've got 6 months
I
more.
Know.
This boat is just leaving the dock.
You better go buy some children's aspirin.
I need stronger stuff than that.
No, get the kids aspirin because it's the same color as Trump's hair. It'll remind you of him every time you take one.
He drinks Tang and spills it on himself, does he even see where he spilled it? I mean, no. I just don't even understand that.
I don't know.
The skin, the hair.
I don't know.
I'm the first person to admit I use fake tan stuff. But they've come a long way where you're not as orange
right.
as that.
Well, I just can't wait for you guys for your segment later when you talk about his spokesman.
You alerted us to this story, and now ABC News sent us this pitch so they could do a segment on
245.
It. 245. Yeah, 245.
Shoshana Walsh.
Yep.
Is John Miller going to join you?
I don't think we will have John Miller on.
No, okay.
No.
We have tape of John Miller.
Yeah. We'll play the tape.
I love it.
For people who don't know what we're talking about,
stay tuned.
A little chapter from Donald Trump's recent history that I think you'll enjoy.
He's a good actor.
Yeah, he's a good actor. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and then when we come back, we will explore the myths surrounding this and other Friday the 13th. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. All right. Today, as we've mentioned, is Friday the 13th, and that is considered to be an unlucky day, and actually the number 13 is considered to be unlucky.
Triskaidekaphobia.
Triskaidekaphobia, Wendy, which is?
Fear of Triscuits.
The fear of Triscuits? Are you sure?
No, the fear of the number 13, isn't it?
Triskaidekaphobia.
Triskaidekaphobia, something like that.
Right. Not to be confused with Kristendekaphobia, which is the fear of having fantastic hair. A lot of people suffer from that.
Who would fear that?
I don't know why you'd fear that. I don't know why that one never took off. The belief that the number 13 is unlucky is so widespread that its origins are unclear. Different theories link it to Christian tradition, which is why they make Donald Trump pay his taxes. Once again related to the Last Supper, where Judas is said to have sat at the 13th place on the table. Could that hold true to this day? Would the number 13 be unlucky because of where Judas sat at the Last Supper? I don't know.
I don't know. I just saw Jesus Christ Superstar. I bet that's true.
Well, maybe. In Viking lore, the trickster god Loki was the 13th god, so that may play into it. In the Persian zodiac, in which there are 12 signs, they leave the number 13 alone to represent chaos. Hmm. The specific fear that Friday the 13th... there's so many words.
I'm sorry, I was finished at one today.
The specific fear that Friday the 13th dates back to the 19th century combines two old superstitions, the fear that the number 13... with the belief that Fridays are unlucky days. Why would Fridays be unlucky?
Best day ever invented, as you often say.
It is the best day ever invented. There's nothing unlucky about a Friday. And then the morbid fear of the number 13, as you pointed out, is known as Triskaidekaphobia.
Oh, it is Triskaidekaphobia?
Yeah. And it is so common that many buildings have no floor number 13. Now,
is stupid.
Right, because if you live on the 14th floor, you know you're on the 13th floor.
I know. It's so stupid unless you have the 13th floor and just leave it vacant.
I know you won't remember this. You would. I told you this years ago and you didn't notice it. And then once I pointed it out to you, you did, that on almost every major airline, there's no 13th row. It goes from the 12th row to the 14th row.
I could have sworn I've sat in row 13.
There are some that do it, but I noticed this years ago when I was traveling a lot more often, when I was in the air all the time. Almost every airline I was on went from 12 to 14 every time.
This is where I'd like to use my lifeline, Steve
sure.
Bertrand Travel.
Yeah.
Does that appear
Steve,
to
is
be
that true?
It's not something I've noticed, but I wouldn't doubt Bill ever.
Yeah.
Well, you're going to be taking a trip somewhere soon, aren't you?
Yeah, Prague and Vienna and then Ireland in October.
Will you look and see if there's a row 13? Because that's the long haul flights.
Yeah.
I'll do that, and then I'll go up to the people sitting, and I'm like, you know, I'm surprised there's a row
right.
13 here.
This is the unlucky row you're in. Good luck to you people.
You know, what's funny is he will.
Yeah.
He's not yeah. teasing.
You know, in the unlikely event of a water landing, it's actually more likely with you people.
But have a great trip. Have a good time.
Steve Bertrand Travel.
Right. Magazine.
Throw a business card on their lap. Gotta go.
If you travel again.
Yeah, right. If you make it, use this next time.
What was the building here in Chicago that their address was 666 something?
It was the Playboy building, wasn't it?
It was the Playboy building. Well, no. Was it the Playboy building? I'm trying to think of what it would
be. What was that, 666 Whacker?
I don't think it was, although that would have made perfect sense. Whatever this building was,
Actually, Steve, it's not the Playboy building, I don't think.
It was on Lakeshore Drive,
but
right?
It was the one where some of the Playboy offices were.
Yeah, not there. I thought it was their office headquarters right over here. But
well, that's appropriate.
But they decided that the address was unlucky for all the tenants, so they just switched it by a couple numbers, right? It was, the building didn't move. They just changed the address to accommodate not being 666.
All right, somebody sat in the 13th row. Cheryl?
Yeah, I just flew with my family over spring break to Washington, D.C. and back, and we sat in the 13th row both ways.
And did you didn't hesitate for a minute, right? When you saw your ticket, you're not...
Actually, my brother was born on Friday the 13th, and it's always been lucky for our family.
Same with me. My youngest son, Dylan, was born on Friday the 13th, and I was in room, like, 913.
No.
And my epidural...
I was just going to say, like, phone numbers and room numbers and addresses and things that we interact with always at the 13 or our 13. So, for us, it's been lucky. I didn't even think about it, to be honest.
Sure. And I don't want to, I'm not saying this to be mean, but if you're on an airplane and something bad happens to the 13th row.
11 and 12 are going to be screwed,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, it's going to spread. Yeah.
Thank you, Cheryl.
Right. Thanks a lot. Love your show, guys.
Thanks, have a good weekend. Now, the number 666, and if you thought triskaidekaphobia was a long word, there's a word that's three times as long to describe the fear of the number 666.
You can say it.
Do you even want to try that?
I can try it. Let me look at it.
Try the fear of the number 666. What's that called?
Hexacosia, hexacontahexaphobia.
Is that what it is?
That's what it sounds like.
Sounds like it. That is the technical name for the fear of that number 666, which is also known as the number of the beast.
Rock on.
Rock on.
I almost just swore with the second word. Almost let it fly.
Don't. The beast will come and you'll spend eternity with the Dark Lord. The superstition undeniably comes from Christianity.
Yep.
The number is mentioned as being representative of Satan in the biblical book of Revelations. It has gained in popularity by being featured heavily in films like The Omen. Remember that kid Damien?
Yeah.
He had it on his scalp.
I know. Was it a birthmark or a tattoo?
It was a birthmark.
Yeah.
It was a birthmark. And when he, remember the scene where he went into Bo Rix to get his hair cut and they're like, Mr. Thorne, what are we going to do? Damien's got the 666 and he goes, just cover it up with hair. I don't want the kids to make fun of him. It was taken so seriously by former U.S. President Ronald Reagan that when he moved into a private house at the end of his presidency, he had the street number changed from 666 to 668. That's just like that building here in Chicago. However, it might be that everyone's got it all wrong. In 2005, a group of scholars announced that they had discovered evidence that the number was originally supposed to be, the mark of the beast is not supposed to be 666, but 616.
Yeah.
Scholars decided that. They had nothing better to do.
You would think scholars,
but you would think they'd be solving
they
bigger
problems. They figured everything else
I
out.
So.
Come on, they're smart.
I'm sorry.
Leo, you know the building we were discussing that changed its number?
Yeah, that was the old Furniture Mart on Lakeshore Drive.
That's what it is.
It was originally built back in the 20s. They had loading docks built into the roof
because
they envisioned having dirigibles bring the big loads in. And they were going to dock up there.
That's what it was. That's it. All right. Well, we appreciate it, Leo. Thank you very much.
Righto. Hi. Good show.
They sold to a company called Satan Co. years later, and the devil had his office there.
Did the devil make you do it?
Yes.
They moved the loading docks to way down in the sub-basements?
Yes, they did.
All right. Somebody just texted, most high-rise buildings use the 13th floor for MEP services. What is that? So they don't have apartments or offices on that floor.
I don't know what MEP services are. I just
maintenance.
Know, oh, is that what it is?
Experiments and personnel.
Maintenance, experiments, and personnel, Steve. Is that right?
I think that's your MEP. That's your typical
MEP. That's a MEP. My grandmother's building in on Lakeshore Drive.
Mechanical, electrical, and plumbing.
Oh, maybe.
Sorry.
But do they put that
some
on
of them? Yeah.
Do they do that specifically so that people aren't living on the 13th floor?
Well, who's going to live there?
I would
live there because you'd
afraid.
Have the whole floor to yourself.
When I went to the Soviet Union back in the days of the Soviet Union, the high-rise hotels would have a missing floor, but that was because that's where the KGB offices were.
Oh, really?
Right, because they would monitor all the rooms and everything.
So you wouldn't be accessible by elevator. If you were in an elevator, you couldn't hit any of those floors.
It usually was, I mean, the stories were that it was like one floor, like the sixth
floor. Really?
Interesting.
Yeah. I didn't know that.
Espionage.
All right, we have to take a break. Steve has the news. Sometime in the next half hour, you'll have a chance to win a fantastic vacation getaway to Bailey's Harbor Yacht Club Resort in Door County. So stay where you are. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Oops, I have to hit the button, don't I?
Yeah, you have to.
Sorry, I was done at noon.
All right.
Bill, it's always so much fun to meet the listeners and have them tell me, boy, will you tell Bill how great he is at hosting a game show?
Is that true? Have people
Honest
said
to
that
God.
To you? That's so nice.
My own family.
That's so nice. I'm a big fan of the game show. I grow up watching the game shows, and I've always enjoyed hosting these. And, you know, we get to give people fabulous prizes.
How fabulous, you ask?
Oh, this is a good trip.
A two-night stay in a one-bedroom courtyard suite at the Bailey's Harbor Yacht Club Resort in Door County, Wisconsin.
Yep.
We're going to do this right now? Is that what we're going to do?
We're going to do this right now. Now, this is the part of the game that I hate. We have to clear the lines. I know a lot of people, they hear the music, and they just impulsively dial us up. So the lines are now being cleared. Kevin is clearing the lines. We're starting anew. Dial us up at 312-981-7200. Wendy will select two random callers, and they will square off for this prize over at Bailey's Harbor Yacht Club Resort.
It's lucky 13, so let's do 1 and 3.
You
the do
first
that? Caller, third
right,
caller.
Let's do that.
312-981-7200. Kevin will get them on the line. And then we are playing for a two-night stay, one-bedroom courtyard suite at the Bailey's Harbor Yacht Club Resort in Door County, Wisconsin. You can enjoy scenic views, serene beauty on the shores of Lake Michigan. Amenities include indoor and outdoor pool, whirlpool, sauna, and Door County activities within minutes away from Bailey's Harbor, Bill.
Oh, yeah, it's close.
It's open year-round. Book your getaway by calling 800-927-2492, or you can go online at bhycr.com.
Now, the winner, of course, will walk away with this trip to Bailey's Harbor Yacht Club Resort. I always say to you, I think the winner should get nothing and just be shamed, but you see it otherwise. You say, no, you can't do that to people, so you'll have a prize for them as well.
That's you just said the
second.
Winner should be shamed.
No, the winner should not be shamed. Whoever comes in second should
be shamed.
We got
a Lou Malnati's.
All right, that's a great prize.
We'll do that too. Lou Malnati's gift certificate.
All right, let's meet the contestants, and then we'll find out about them and then find a winner.
All right, this caller number one is Patricia. Hi, Patricia.
Hello, Wendy. How are you?
Good. Where are you from?
I live in Batavia.
Bill, do you have any other further questions for Patricia?
Patricia, if you could, just a fun fact about yourself, just something for people who are listening that they can know you a little bit better. Just tell us something about you.
I'm a family of 13 kids.
Wow.
Yep.
A Catholic family?
Irish Catholic.
Irish Catholic, yep.
All right, would you like to meet your contestant?
I would.
All right, or your challenger, I should say. This is Mike. He's from Chicago. Hi, Mike.
Hey, how you doing, Wendy?
Good. Bill?
Mike, just a little something about you. What do we need to know about you?
Let's see. Love to travel.
Yeah?
Like up to Door County.
Well, this would be a perfect thing for either one of you, then.
Good answer.
You could travel, which is your dream, and Patricia, you could get away from all those brothers and sisters. So you both, whoever wins something. All right. Let me explain the game to you. It's very, very simple. Today's game is called the AKA game. Wendy, AKA means what exactly? Do you know what AKA means?
Also known as.
So what will happen during this game, Patricia and Mike, is I will name a group of people or things, and you will tell me what they are also known as. Here's a quick example, Wendy. If I were to say, Bobby, Cindy, Jan, Greg, Peter, and Marcia, they would also be known as?
The Brady Bunch.
Correct. That's how it works. So when you know, either Patricia or Mike, buzz in by saying your name, and we'll go to whoever calls it out first. Patricia, can I hear your buzzer, please?
Patricia.
Yep. And then, Mike, yours sounds like what?
Mike.
Yeah, perfect. Wow, you guys are fast on the draw. Okay, so here's how it'll go down. There are 10 questions in the AKA game. They range from very, very simple, that's the 100-point question, down to the more difficult, the 1,000 question. They'll get increasingly more difficult as we go on. Good luck to both of you. Are there any questions?
Nope.
All right.
Nope.
All right. Again, I will just call out a list of people or things. You tell me what they are also known as. Question number one is worth 100 points, Patricia and Mike. Here goes. Donatello, Leonardo.
Mike. The Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is right. You saved yourself there, Mike. Very nicely done. You're up 100 to nothing. Question two is worth 200 points. Here goes. Ginger,
Baby, Scary, Sporty.
Patricia. Mike.
Patricia, I heard
Patricia first.
Yeah.
Spice Girls.
Absolutely right, Patricia. You have taken the lead, 200 to Mike's 100. Question number three is worth 300 points. Remember, as the points go up, the questions get a little more difficult. Here's question three, worth 300 points. Athos, Porthos, and Aramis.
Mike.
Mike?
Colognes?
Those are not colognes, Mike.
That
no.
was a, the Aramis
yeah,
that you're going
those
the
are not
other
colognes.
Way.
Patricia, you have a chance to steal. Athos, Porthos, and Aramis, also known as?
No clue.
Can I try?
When do you try?
Greek gods?
Nope. Those are the Three Musketeers. Dumas' Three Musketeers.
That is a train.
Now, a train just hit one of our contestants, Wendy, so we must take a timeout. All right. It is 200 for you, Patricia. Mike, a very close second place with 100. It's time for question four, worth 400 points. Who are these also known as? Jill, Kelly, and Sabrina.
Wendy.
Patricia.
Oh, Patricia was first.
Patricia was first. Patricia, go ahead.
The witches.
Those are not witches. Mm-hmm. No, no, no. Mike, do you want a chance to steal on Jill, Kelly, and Sabrina?
Yes, Charlie's Angels.
They are Charlie's Angels, Mike. Absolutely right. You have taken over
they
the lead.
They sometimes were witches, Patricia.
Yeah, right.
500 for you, Mike. 200 for you, Patricia. Very close game. Here's the fifth question. It is worth 500 points. Here goes. Balthazar, Melchior, and Gaspar. Nobody on that one. Wendy, do you know?
Yes, but I can't think of it. Children of the Corn.
Those are not Children of the Corn. Nope. Those would be your three wise men or the Magi.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Balthazar, Melchior, and Gaspar. Mike,
bad
you're
Catholic, Patricia.
Absolutely.
Me too.
Mike, you have a thin lead. 500 points to Patricia's 200 points. We're midway through. This is question six. It's worth 600 points. Here goes. The Belmont Stakes, the Preakness, the Kentucky Derby.
Mike.
Mike?
Trisha.
Mike was
Mike
first.
Got it.
What is it, Mike?
The Triple Crown.
Yeah, absolutely. The Triple Crown. You lead 1,100 to Patricia's 200. Question seven is worth 700 points. Here goes. Ray Stantz, Peter Venkman, Egon Spengler.
Mike.
Mike?
They are the Ghostbusters.
Those are the Ghostbusters. Absolutely right. You're now leading 1,800 to Patricia's 200. Patricia, there's three left. You can still do this. It's not over yet.
But you have to wake up.
You do have to wake up. Keep that train out of your mind.
All right. That's right.
Question eight is worth 800 points. Here goes. Lust, gluttony, greed, sloth.
Mike.
Mike.
Seven deadly sins.
Absolutely right, Mike. 2,600 to Patricia's 200.
I thought you were describing me on my online Tinder profile.
Question nine, 900 points. Here goes. Manny, Mo, and Jack.
Manny, Mo, and Jack.
Manny, Mo, and Jack. Nobody on that one. Wendy, do you know that one?
I'm going to be mad at myself.
Those are the Pep Boys. Are Manny, Mo, and Jack, the Pep Boys.
That's right.
One question left. It's 1,000 points. Joe, Amy, Beth, and Meg.
Wow.
1,000 points.
Patricia.
Patricia?
Little Sisters.
Ooh, close, but not quite. No. Do you want a chance to steal, Mike?
I'm not sure what it is.
That's all right.
Oh,
Wendy,
Patricia,
you know this?
I only know it because Patricia said it. Little Women.
Little Women. Joe,
Little
Amy,
Women.
Beth, and Meg are from Louisa May Alcott's Little Women. That means, Patricia, you came in second with 200 points, but our winner today is you, Mike, from Chicago. What a score. You're our winner. You're going to Bailey's Harbor Yacht Club Resort.
Oh, perfect. Thank you.
All right, Patricia.
Congratulations, Mike.
Oh, isn't that
Thank
nice?
Thank you, Patricia.
Isn't
Aww.
That
You're
nice?
Welcome.
We're all coming together.
Everybody's
you know, Patricia,
happy.
Hang on, because we're going to set you up with a Lou Malnati's gift certificate. Lou Malnati's is home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. Find one of their 40 locations. Go online to loumalnati's.com. Hang on a second, okay?
All right. Thank you.
And Mike, you, my friend, are going two-night stay, one-bedroom courtyard suite at the Bailey's Harbor Yacht Club Resort in Door County, Wisconsin. I think I put him on hold. And I, hey, Mike, there you go.
Hi, how you doing?
Yeah, so you get a two-night stay. You're going to see scenic views, serene beauty. There's a whirlpool, sauna, Door County activities just minutes away. And you are going. Go to BHYCR.com or lucky you, Mike, a two-night stay.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Congrats, Mike. Have a great time.
I will.
All right, take care.
I just picture Bill sitting at home saying, what were the names of the girls in Little Women?
Right. I knew that one. Oh. I knew that one off the top of my head. I knew all of them.
He's very literary,
yes.
Steve.
Yes, yes.
All right, so is Donald Trump. He is he's a lot of things. We're going to find out a little bit more of the abilities that he has. Take a quick break, find out about it next.
Yep, it's all coming up. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Well rebounded, Wendy. It's Bill F. It's Wendy Snyder. Shoshana Walsh joins us right now from ABC News. Shoshana, I will say this about Donald Trump. There's no such thing as a dull day anymore. Every day he seems to find a way to make the day more interesting, doesn't he?
Well, that is absolutely true. Every single day is a different story, new eyebrow-raising comment. We could really almost talk all day long.
Yep, yep, yep.
All right, well, someone has obtained a copy of a publicist named John Miller, or sometimes mm-hmm. John Barron, and we have a little clip we're going to play. And
oh, good.
He called, this publicist called, was it People Magazine?
Yes.
To make some comments. Here we go.
What's your name again?
John Miller.
And you work with John Miller?
Yes, that's correct.
John Miller.
What kind of comment is coming from either your agency or from Donald?
Well, it's just that he really decided that he wasn't, he didn't want to make the commitment. He didn't want to make a commitment. He really thought it was too soon. He's coming out of a marriage that... And he's starting to do tremendously well financially, as you saw. He got his licenses 5-0 the other day, and totally unanimous. And he's really been working hard and doing well. And probably, as you know, there's a real estate depression in the United States, and he's probably doing as well as anybody there is.
So he's defending Donald Trump and sounding very much like Donald Trump.
But there's a little bit of background to this, right, Shoshana? What preceded this?
We're actually learning that this went on for almost a decade, that he was calling reporters as this person, John Miller, sometimes as John Barron, but it wasn't a spokesperson, it was Donald Trump himself. And we know that it's actually him, besides that, of course, it sounds so much like him, but that he testified in a court case that it under oath that it was him, and then also admitted in a People article that he was having a little fun with it, that he was joking around and that it was him. This morning, he was actually asked by NBC about the story, about the tapes, because the Washington Post has that tape that you just played, and he got very angry and categorically denied that it was him, even though in the past he has said it was him.
Well, how can he I guess that's the dumbest question on earth. How can he do that? Because he can do anything he wants.
Right. We've seen him change positions on this, on different issues throughout this campaign over and over again. But it is still noteworthy that he categorically denied something that he had already admitted to.
But even by his own standards, Shoshana, a crank phone call or phone calls, are we electing one of the jerky boys to be our president?
He
hasn't been elected yet.
Not yet.
Yeah, exactly. And, I think that it wasn't really trying to prank them. He was really trying to act as his own spokesperson and trying to explain things from Mr. Trump's point of view by just being Mr. Trump. It sounds completely outrageous and ridiculous. seems to be the point of it.
Okay, yeah. So I want to understand this because I didn't know this part. So you're saying that in the past he's testified and said, yeah, that was me on those recordings. And,
right.
And today he was asked about it, on Good Morning America or somewhere?
No, actually on the Today Show.
And he said today, he said, oh, no, that wasn't me?
Yeah, and he got very angry saying that, this happened 25 years ago. How can you ask him about something that happened 25 years ago? And really, he 100% categorically denied that it was him.
Here's the quote. This sounds like one of the scams, one of the many scams. Doesn't sound like me. I don't think it was me. It doesn't sound like me. And then he went on to say, you're going so low to talk about something that took place right. 25 years ago, whether or not I made a phone call. Let's get on to more current subjects.
So again, he's twisted it. I mean, this is the kind of thing you would think would be beneath a guy of this stature, and it isn't. But as he usually does, he twists it and makes the other person the bad guy for even asking the question.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Or at least tries to, we should say.
All right. Now, at this point in his career, if this was 20 or 25 years ago, Shoshana, he was a very successful businessman. And if he wanted a job like this done, he had people that could have made those phone calls for him. Why would he do it himself instead of having a staffer do these phone calls?
You know, it's a great question, but I think that the only thing I could think of is really because he wanted to. He wanted to act as his own spokesperson. He didn't want to have other people talking for him. And we do see a little bit of that in the current campaign when, you know, his whole campaign is that let Trump be Trump and let Trump speak for himself. And nobody speaks for Mr. Trump but Trump. And it seems to just kind of be another iteration of this philosophy. If I could call it that.
We were talking about this amongst ourselves on the show earlier, but I'll bring it up to you. Is this and the fact that he's failing to release his tax information, are these the kind of things who, again, if they were any other candidate, you'd go, oh, boy, is this going to be a problem? But because it's Donald Trump, you just go, no, that's kind of the way he is. What can you do?
Right. And, it's hard to know at this point what's going to be a problem because he's said so many outrageous things. And he's the first to say that. It helps him, that it helps pull numbers, that they go up. So, it's hard to know. And then, of course, the tax returns, which is a huge story, interview with our George Stephanopoulos this morning really tried to ask the hard questions that we've been trying to ask. When are you going to release your tax returns? I mean, Donald Trump said this morning that the Americans don't have the right to see his tax returns and that he will release them if the audit is over and only if the audit is over. So, but we'll see. Do the voters care?
He makes up his own rules. That's it.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. We appreciate it.
Oh, anytime.
Thanks, Shoshana. Shoshana Walsh of ABC News. We will take a quick break and then check in with Roe and Anna next. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN.